We have one absence. Okay, so moving on to our many student representatives. We've got a lot of people here tonight. So did you flip a coin, or how do we know who's going? Thank you.
All right, good afternoon to the board members. First of all, I'd like to apologize for some of my absences. School and sports have kept me very busy. Just keep you updated on what's been happening at Morro Bay. A couple weeks ago, we had a Spirit Week. It's deemed a Neon Week, very popular at school. It's one of the most well-attended events we have at Morro Bay. This year, we decided to do something actually a little bit different for it. We had an extended lunch, and we actually took food trucks on campus, mixed up a little bit something for students other than the cafeteria food. We had shaved ice, burritos, Jamba Juice out there. Pretty fun. It was actually very well-attended also. Then we had prom just this last week. Very popular event as also. Just good way to finish up our last little bit of school here, going into the final stretch. Seniors have finally committed to all their colleges, at least, well, 90% of them. There's still those private colleges that don't let all of them in. So if any of you have any students in there looking at them, they'll be very willing to talk to you about their colleges and what they're going to do with the future. Now we have sports finishing up. We have a swim likely going to CIF with many divers in there also. AP testing begins this week, as many of my fellow students probably here know, going into next week also, so don't expect us to be very attentive when we're looking at a book at you. And then other than that, the last thing on the agenda for Morro Bay is our elections for ASB will begin soon, which also consequently is to vote my replacement.
Okay. All right.
And that's all we have at Morro Bay. Thank you.
Thank you. Jono.
Hi, everybody. Board members, Skills USA and FFA, both parents and attendees. I'm Jono Roberts, for those of you who don't know me, and I would like to start off by saying we have just elected our class officers for the seniors, juniors, and sophomores for next year. I'd go into names, but I was told to cut it short this time. I tend to go long. We also just released our commissioner packets for ASB next year. Now, this is different than the class officers in which you apply for certain positions. You don't run an election. We also have our Golden Tigers Awards coming up, which you all should have received an invitation to. Hopefully you got it. Hopefully you'll show up. It's a big blast. There's the jazz band playing. We've got cheesecake. It's awesome. It's a whole event. I believe it is next week. Oh. It's not for a while. We'll find out. It should be on the invitations. I was just told that it was. We're also finishing up our spike ball intramural tournament. For those of you who don't know spike ball, it's a ball that you hit. It's like volleyball for four people. It's awesome. We've also got our athletics for the third trimester. We have over 400 athletes this trimester. Our boys' tennis team is 20-3 overall and have won their second consecutive undefeated league title, which is super cool. We also have our boys' track and field, which has broken many school records and might win their third league title in a row, that three-peat. And all eight sports have a great chance to make it into the playoffs. And aside from that, we now have a video that we brought in. We recently put on a Mental Health Awareness Week in line with the semicolon day. Now, semicolons are used by authors to continue a sentence where they could have ended it. And it's used as you are the author and the sentence is your life. It's a lot of suicide awareness and mental health and whatnot. So we brought a video along. Actually made by Trevor Porter, who's sitting right there. I've mentioned him before when talking about Skills USA and stuff. He's a jack of all trades. So we have that. There we go.
For the first time, people feel what real love is.
The vision is that people see the true value in their story.
The vision is that suicide is no longer an option to be considered.
The vision is everyone loves one another regardless of the label that they wear.
The vision is to reduce suicide rates in America and around the world.
The vision is that blades are put down.
The vision is that for the first time, steps are taken towards recovery.
The vision is that society no longer pushes suicide, mental illness, addiction, and self-harm out of the way.
The vision is that for the first time, conversations are being started.
The vision is hope, and hope is alive.
The vision is that everyone comes together as a community, stands together in support of one another.
The vision is love. The vision is love.
The vision is love.
The vision is love.
The vision is love.
The vision is love.
The vision is love.
Have my own.
So, yeah. And we complimented that day by giving announcements throughout the week on facts about such things as anxiety and depression and ways that you can combat it or ways you can contact to get help, both resources on and off campus. And on the Thursday, semicolon day, we had semicolon stickers that we gave to everybody as they walked in. And at break, we handed out lifesavers. As corny as it is, it was a good way to let everybody know that it is a thing that's on campus, whether or not you're dealing with it. And if you are dealing with it, you're not alone, and there's ways to help. So that's all I have to say for today.
Thank you, Jono. Thanks a lot. That was
Thank
that was
you, guys.
Okay. Any other questions or comments to our student representatives? Will you introduce your guest, please, Jono?
This is Bella Stenvall. She will be the ASB president next year, and she will be taking over my position. So I brought her last time and this time just to show her how not to do it. You know.
Yeah. Thank you. And after hearing about the upcoming AP exams, for a change tonight, I think I speak on behalf of all of us when we actually encourage you to leave. Go do what you need to do. You are, of course, welcome to stay, but this is a very busy time, and you have great responsibilities. So do what you need to do.
I think I'm going to stay and check out our awesome students out here.
Yeah.
But after
Good.
That, I'll...
Okay, great. Thank you.
However, for myself, I will be leaving you guys. Thank you so much. I do congratulate the future Skills USA and FFA members here. And I'm going to go study and cram for an AP test. I hopefully won't fail.
I understand. Thank you.
Thanks
for coming. All right, now we do have this wonderful celebration of our Skills USA and FFA students, and I'm not sure who's...
Well, I'll go ahead and just get us started. We have men and women in uniform, so I guess we should hear a little bit about them. So starting with our Skills USA, I see we have Tim Fay, Jeff Limkuhl, and Donald Rapucci. So maybe you guys can come on up and explain about the skills, what's happening, the awards we've won, and where we're going.
Okay, thanks very much. I'm Jeff Limkuhl from San Luis High, and Tim Fay from San Luis High, and Don Rapucci from Morro Bay High, and we're all three Skills USA instructors. I don't know why they're standing behind me and not alongside of me, but anyways. So we just thought we'd tell you a little bit about it and then introduce our students. Skills USA, I like to say, and I don't know what the FFA people will say about this, but Skills USA is to technical areas what FFA is to agriculture areas. Both have leadership components in them, but Skills USA covers a very, very wide range of technical areas, everything from auto and welding and drafting and programming and cosmetology and on and on and on. It's quite a vast array. But we've done this. We started in 2004 at San Luis High. I'm not exactly sure when Morro Bay started. And for automotive and welding, we've been going to the national contests for about 8 of the last 11 years. And we're kind of on a roll, and it's been great, and we really appreciate your support because the board has supported us and our students all those years. I'm going to introduce the automotive. Well, actually, I'll introduce Jan's students first because Jan Fetcho is not able to be here. She's not feeling so well. But I'd like to bring up Kaz Bishop and Kira Heinz. They are, well, I'll let you tell them about what they're doing. Come on up.
All right, so I'm Kaz Bishop, and
I'm Kira Heintz.
We did interactive application game development at Skills USA, and we won silver medals. So basically what we did...
We're a team, by the way.
Yes, we're a team. We were given the school year to develop an interactive application or game, and we chose to make a game this year. And so we spent the school year designing this game, and we got past regionals, and... At state, we had to show off the game, and there were about seven other teams there, also showing off their games. What we did for ours was we designed sort of a
satirical,
highly satirical, like, stock manipulation Monopoly game.
What it is, the goal of the game is you are a company, and you are supposed to build up your stock and become the highest in the market and create a monopoly over the
stock market, yeah. And it's based off of, like, real events and other things, but... I did the code.
And I did all of the art and character design.
So that's what we did. Thanks.
Cool. Great.
Next student is Trevor Porter from programming.
Come on up, Trevor.
Hi, I'm Trevor. Ooh, that's loud. Okay, my bad. I'm Trevor. I competed in computer programming. And after winning, I actually found that it opened a lot of opportunities for me because it set me apart from other students. So yesterday, I actually committed to UC Davis. And initially, I didn't get in there. So I was kind of bummed. You know, I was bummed about that. But then after winning Skills USA, I thought, my dad thought, and other students thought that I should try to appeal. And I did, and I got in, and I'm very thankful to Skills USA for that because it's an opportunity that'll take you. It really changed my future. So I really owe Skills USA my future, so thank you.
Thank you.
Trevor programmed at the state contest, I think, for 8 hours, am I right?
Yeah.
For 8 hours, and won the gold medal, so he'll be going to the Nationals in Louisville, Kentucky with us. July 21st through the 27th, if I'm not mistaken. And then my student, Ben Hurley and Bryce Luther. Come on up, Ben and Bryce. This is the... Ben and Bryce are for the category of automotive service technology. Maybe you can just give them a 30-second, tell them what the contest is like. Step up.
Okay. So the contest is it's about a six-hour contest where we had 17 stations, and each station is a different sort of portion of what you'll be doing in the automotive field on the car. So you have a brake station and a customer service RO station, which is the repair order, and then several other stations just on alignment and all the different facets that you can have in a car that you're going to have to know to be able to work in this field. So just prepares you for the working in the field.
The day before? And the day before, we actually had to do an actual interview, which sort of prepared us if we were actually going into the automotive field, and also a written test, which exercised our knowledge on automotive questions in the field.
Really nice for us. This is the first time we've had two juniors get the gold and silver at the state contest. I've never had, only had seniors before. So Ben, because he got the gold medal, will go with me to Louisville in June. So kind of neat.
Yeah.
And they both can compete next year, so I guarantee you Bryce will be back. And then go ahead, Tim.
Well, why don't we start with our machinist? So if I could get the Phelan brothers up here.
Go ahead and tell them what you did.
All right. Hi, I'm Gus Phelan.
And I'm Thomas Phelan.
And we competed in CNC milling. So for our competition, we sat out in the classroom in like the one of the welding shops, and they gave us a piece of paper with plans on it for just a simple part for the machine to make. And we have to come up with all the codes and tool paths to program the machine, and it follows whatever we type into it. So it gets kind of confusing after a while.
Yeah. And then we also had to take a test, and like a 100-question test to exercise our knowledge about CNC and what kind of tools you would use for certain stuff. So
yeah, it's pretty confusing after a while after thinking of... You have codes, like they're called G-codes, and there's about 150 of them that you have to know what each of them do. So after a while, a G02 sounds like a G21, and yeah, it gets confusing. So, yeah.
And can I ask a question? So, are these multi-bit milling machines that the automatically changes the tool to fit whatever you programmed in?
They have the automatic tool changer, so you can just program a T1 M06, and then you'll get your first tool in the carousel. So, yeah. Yeah.
It was our first year to compete in the CNC machining. We were lucky enough to purchase CNC machine in the shop a few years ago, and Gus won the gold medal, so he'll be headed back to Kentucky with us, and Thomas got silver as a sophomore, so that was pretty cool to see the two of them, or bronze, I gave him a little, but so that was a lot of fun. Some other guys that will be heading to Kentucky with us are our welding fabrication team. Kent Murphy is not with us. He's at a volleyball game tonight, senior night at the volleyball game, so he's there. But Will Kramer and Max Selma, let them come on up.
Hi, I'm Will Kramer.
I'm Max Selma.
And basically what our competition is that we have 6.5 hours to build a... They give you a project. Like for state, our project was to build a fire pit, and you have to build they give you the amount of metal to use, what welds you have to do, and a certain number of requirements, and you have to build it in under 6.5 hours. And half the points are how well you can weld, and then also how well you work together with your team, safety, and then a written test. And you got any other?
Yeah, and they also you have about 2 months to design the project, so they gave us what we were going to build in like February, and then we have to draw prints, and that's also a big portion of the score is how well you did your print and how well you follow your print.
And for the past few months we've been going in quite a few times during lunch and after school and weekends, devoting like many hours to devote like all of our lunches to actually design the project, and then quite a few weekends to actually build them, because we have to do practice builds. And so our national contest, it's a barbecue smoker. So we're making a octagonal smoker. So
we're making about five practice builds, and they're for sale.
Yeah. And thank you guys for sending us.
Thank you.
The welding fabrication contest is truly a STEM project from start to finish. It is science, engineering, technology, and math. It's like you said, they get a list of materials, and they get some requirements, and they start designing and engineering, and they have to make it easy enough to manufacture, but also has to have that element that makes it something somebody wants. So anyway, it's a great competition, a lot of fun, and a lot of hard work, and these young men work very, very hard. So and then we got Daniel Herrera, who I should explain. SkillsUSA is kind of like track. You can do one event, or you can do multiple events. And what Daniel did is he did the multiple events. He kind of did the Ironman welding, where he did every process that's on the books, and he took the gold medal in that, and he'll also be headed back to Kentucky with us. So I'll let him talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my name's Daniel Herrera, and we go there and we get prints. I think it was this year we did MIG, flux core, stick, TIG, and oxyfuel cutting, and we have, I think it was 45 minutes to complete each station, and then we rotate and go through those. And it's a long day, but it's really fun and good practice for the industry. So thank you guys for sending us to Louisville.
And one of our competitors in a single event was your state champion in TIG welding, which is one of the more technical aspects of welding. This is a young guy right here as a sophomore, and he's a state champion TIG welder. It's pretty impressive. Oh, it's Jacob Grant.
All right, so I'm Jacob Grant, and I'm competing in the TIG aspect of the competition. And so basically the judges came around and gave us the five pieces of metal, and we had to build a pyramid, and they had plans and taped up into the booths that we were welding in, and we just had to follow the plans and put it together, and all the welds had to be in the correct spot, and you had to have the correct amount of welds, and yeah, just had to follow the plans, and hopefully you won. Yeah,
it worked.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for everything that you guys have done for these kids. Morro Bay, I was, Jeff said,
2004. I was thinking I was either 2001 or 2002 when I started Skills. It's been a great experience. We have two medalists this year. One is in pin design, which is she was silver, and she is Katie Taylor, and she unfortunately can't be here today. But she designed a really nice pin. It's the kind that you would see at Disneyland. A couple years ago, Joe Rapucci went to National with that competition, and she did a great job with it. She was only a few points off from getting first place. So unfortunately, that didn't happen, but we're real glad that she worked at it. Then the other person is James McRoberts. James McRoberts is in computer repair. And he will tell you all about it.
Hi. Thank you for supporting us, first of all. So the competition was 10 hours long of sitting in one place, waiting for him to grade it. In between each little section of the competition, it was a good idea probably at first, but it didn't follow through that way. Anyway, it mostly entailed fixing various computer problems, like, say something wasn't networked right, or somebody's web browser was just letting in tons of stuff. We would just fix it, and then they would grade accordingly. Horribly planned out competition, but it worked, so, yeah. And then I got the gold medal.
Just wanted to add that we really appreciate your investment in these students and the trip to Louisville. We know it's a significant expenditure. Tim's Metal Fab team took the bronze medal at the Nationals last year, so they're definitely going back to try and get the gold this year, I would say. And Ben, my student, has his shoes. He's got a lot on his plate because we're defending national champions from last year. Kelly Ziegler won last year. So thanks so much. We appreciate it.
At the end, if you can stick around, we'll take a picture.
So we also have some blue coats back here. So I think from I see from Morro Bay High School, we have Linda Todd, and from San Luis Obispo High School, Mr. Leslie O'Connor, to introduce our FFA champions.
Good evening, everybody. From Morro Bay, our champion, our state winner, is Tyler Metter, and he can tell you a little bit about his contest.
Hello, I'm Tyler Metter, and I won the state a proficiency for Ag Mechanics Repair and Maintenance placement. So what that means is in FFA we have an SAE, our Supervised Agricultural Experience, and mine is my job working at a Wastes Equipment Rental. So first we started competing at the sectional level, won that, moved on to regional. There's six regions in the state. I won ours, and then they were finding down from those six winners to the top three. Those three go to the state convention, interview, and turn in their applications, and then they pick the winner. And once that's done, and you go on to nationals, and my national application will be due the June 1st. Pretty exciting. Then we'll go back to Louisville. Good. The top four from those 50 states, they'll refine it back down to four, and if I'm one of those top four winners, then I'll go there to interview again.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's my pleasure to introduce our blue coats that are here with us this evening. Anna and Jody, our amazing advisors, are actually spending time with their families this evening, which is a novel idea, right? So we have Avery, we have Amber, we have Kalina, we have Mara, we have Luke, and we have Joelle, and they're going to introduce themselves and tell all of you guys what they do. They're pretty amazing kids, let me tell you.
Hi,
Hi, everyone. I'm Avery Martin, and I'm a senior, and I will be attending Chico to pursue agriculture education. And I'm going to introduce, like, the parliamentary procedure contest, which our team won first in the state for the first time in a very long time. And what Parley Pro is, it's just a 10-minute contest, and it is all about Robert's Rules of Order. So we run a miniature meeting, and we debate a topic that we only get 1 minute to look at. We also take a written test and answer oral questions. So the six of us, and then one other member, Charlie Tiefert, who couldn't be here tonight, won the state contest for that, and we will be heading to Louisville, Kentucky in October to compete at the national level.
Yeah,
congratulations. Hello, I'm Amber Vieira, and I'm a junior at San Luis Obispo High School, and so I'm going to talk about the two awards that our administrator, Mr. O'Connor, and our advisor, Mrs. Anna Bates, won. So Mr. O'Connor was named the Star Administrator for the state of California, and also Miss Anna Bates was named the Star Advisor for the state of California. And so they will both be coming with us to Louisville, Kentucky this October, and they will be competing at the national level. Yeah. And then additionally, as Tyler, the kid from Morro Bay, was describing, we had three state proficiency winners, and I was a winner in agriculture communications, as well as Jessica Judge, who was a senior last year at San Luis Obispo High School. She won under beef production, and another senior another kid who is a senior now, Miguel Lua, won under fiber oil crop production. So they will all be competing at nationals also.
Wow, that's so great.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kalina Cerrone, and so and I'm a sophomore at San Luis Obispo High School. So I'm going to introduce a contest called Creed. It's a 5 paragraphs that freshmen can only compete in, and they memorize. And later we have 3 judges that ask them 3 different questions about agriculture and how it's going to move forward, or basics. And the freshman that placed was Greta Carlson, who won 4th in our state, and also Jamie Radding, who won 3rd. So it was a very big win for our school. Also for myself, I competed in a contest called Impromptu, where I go into a room and I pull out a question and later go into another round and pull out a quote, and that all has to do relating to agriculture. I get a minute to think and I present a 2-minute speech to the judges, and I won state this year for that.
Wow.
Thank you.
Hi, guys. My name is Mara Bassett-Fees, and I'm a senior at Slo High right now. And as Avery was saying, we're sort of just going to give you our college stitch. And I'm actually going to Cornell. And like Trevor was saying, I owed a lot of that to FFA about agriculture and why I want to pursue that. The contest that I individually competed in, it was a public speaking contest called Extemporaneous. And for that contest, it's extemporaneous speaking. We have a binder prepared and then a 30-minute to write a speech on an agricultural topic. So one of the ones that I had was, how does hydraulic fracturing impact agriculture? Production, so things like that. And after I had 3 rounds of that and actually ended up 2nd in the state, so that was pretty cool. And then our chapter also competed in the National Chapter Award application, meaning we as an officer team filled out an application, submitted it to the state association, went through an interview process, and then actually won that as well. So hopefully we'll be competing at the national level if we earn 3 stars, but that's sort of a point system for our chapter that we are quote-unquote the best in California, which is pretty cool.
Hey, everyone. I'm Luke O'Leary. I'm a junior here at San Luis Obispo High School. This past year, I was fortunate enough to serve as a regional officer for our South Coast region, one of the 6 of California, me as well as Joel Lewis and Mara Bassett-Pease. And for this next year, I was reelected as the regional president, along with Amber Bierre as the regional secretary, and Kalina Cerrone as the vice president representing the San Luis Obispo section. So we're super excited to be regional leaders this next year. Also, I competed in prepared public speaking at the state finals, along with Joel Lewis and Amber Bierre, and I was 3rd in state for prepared public speaking. And what this competition is you prepare a 6 to 8 minute speech on an agriculture issue or topic, you memorize it, and then present this speech to a panel of judges, and then they ask you 5 minutes of questions. You don't know what they're going to ask, just anything related to your topic and your issue, and you have to be prepared on your subject and then answer their questions. And it was a super awesome opportunity. I know we had an awesome experience competing in that, and so that was great, and I'm sure we'll have fun competing in that and many other contests throughout this next year.
Hi, Hi, everyone. My name is Joelle Lewis, and I'm a senior here at Slo High currently. And at State Conference, over a course of 4 days, I went through a series of interviews in different rounds related to agriculture and leadership for the state officer candidate process. And I was fortunate enough to be elected as the California State President. So I'm going to spend the next year going around California and putting on workshops and conferences for the 76,000 members that we have here. So I'm extremely fortunate to be able to do that. And we just wanted to say thank you one last time for all the support you've shown us over the past 4 years, especially for us seniors. We're really fortunate to have you supporting us, so thank you.
Thank you, Rashma. Thank you, JP Roth. She's not here tonight. She's got some winners who need to be mentioned. Do you want me to do this, or do you want to read this?
Do I just read them?
Yes, and this is an event that she's...
Okay. Yeah. Board for a quick picture.
Okay, I'll do this as soon as they're done.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be great, John. No funny business.
He's going to Photoshop his head
off. Yeah.
Do we get egg people?
Eggs for Aggie.
You guys are big and tall. Yeah, there we go. Maybe if we're and then we'll have the board. That should work. And then if we could have the board here up front.
Here, come right here.
There we go, Walt. Why don't you and Marilyn come in on this side? We'll be on this side. Ellen.
Am I okay here?
You're okay wherever you are.
Yes. Here, I'll tell you what. I'll get on this side.
You're gonna get a great for this.
Oh, like that.
Blasting.
Hey, where's the beach?
No facts.
Okay.
Got it, Jono?
Jono, take a selfie.
He just did like 30 pictures.
Okay. That's perfect. Thanks, everyone.
No. Kids are all right.
My eggs are in picture too. They're in the middle of the stage.
Somehow they picked enough to move because one of the kids said, "Thank you, we got the eggs." That's what I said. Don't put them up in the top.
Oh.
So following up with the wonderful presentations we just had, we did receive a note from Ms. Washsmith regarding FHA Hero, and she writes, "Thank you so much for your contribution to FHA Hero. Last weekend we were able to take 9 members to our annual state leadership meeting in Fresno, and 2 of our girls won trophies. Sherry Donahue won first place for fashion design, receiving a 1-year scholarship to the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising, a $1,000 scholarship to Woodbury University, and a $1,000 scholarship to the Art Institute. Emily Streeter won third place in apparel construction and a $500 renewable scholarship to the Art Institute, plus a guide to sewing book. Hannah Grinush also won a $1,000 scholarship from the California Home Economics Education Foundation." So we just have winners everywhere. This is great. Yeah. All right. Next, we have correspondence, and this week we've received some correspondence, which I'll recite here. An email from parent Idona Cabrina requesting district support for the choir to travel to Carnegie Hall, a response to Mrs. Cabrina from Morro Bay High School Principal Kyle Pruitt, An email from parent Scott Hamilton regarding kindergarten class size at Monarch Grove with a response from Assistant Superintendent Rick Robinette. An email from parent Amy Higgins regarding class size at Monarch Grove with a response from Assistant Superintendent Robinette and a later response from Dr. Prater. An email from Oakland resident Raleigh McElmore regarding proposed oil transport by rail throughout California. And I think that covers our correspondence. Now it's time for public comment. If anyone wishes to speak to an item not on the listed on the agenda, but of district interest, you're welcome to do so at this time. Also, if you have something you would like to speak about which is on the agenda but don't wish to wait for that item to come up, you can speak now. Mrs. Roger has a list of people who would like to speak at this time.
I have several requests to speak. Let's see. Not that one. I have two requests from Joe Rubio. Okay, so one is just, definitely a public comment request. The other one addresses item 9.04, and I don't know if Mr. Rubio wants to wait until 9.04 to discuss it or wants to do them both. Okay. So why don't we have Mr. Rubio on his first topic, which is not the 9.04 one, followed by William Smith, and then followed by Karen Smith.
Okay. I've never done this before. I have copies of what I'm talking about. Is that something that I should pass out or hand over? Okay.
And to follow up, just you'll have 3 minutes in which to make your comments. We have a timer, and you'll need to conclude within that three-minute time period.
Okay. My name is Joe Rubio. I'm here to voice support for the new all-weather track at San Luis Obispo High School. A little bit about myself. I'm the owner of Running Warehouse in San Luis Obispo, one of the original founding members of the C2C Half Marathon, which served as a primary vehicle responsible for developing the track at Cuesta College, current committee member on the Cal Poly Track and Field Renovation Project. I'm a longtime supporter of San Luis Obispo High School cross country and track. I've attended at least 10 of their summer cross country camps, serving as a volunteer, as a counselor, and at times a slave doing stuff for Mr. Boaz. I'm a parent. My kids attend Pacheco Elementary. They'll attend San Luis Obispo High School, and fingers crossed they'll compete in track and field. Why did I vote in favor of Measure D? In large part, it was due to articles on Measure D specifically mentioning a new all-weather track at San Luis Obispo High School. An article from the Tribune, October 11th of last year, quote, San Luis Obispo High School's list of improvements includes a new cafeteria and kitchen, an all-weather track, a student service center, etc. The Consolidated Voter Information Guide, page 34, specifically mentions a new all-weather track at San Luis Obispo High School. I enthusiastically voted for the bond and encouraged many others to lend their support based in large part on the construction of the new all-weather track. Recently, I viewed three of the most recent master plan options. I was horrified to see a new track missing on two of the options and an addition of a new $115 million building on one of them. When I voted in favor of Measure D, I relied on what the board said were the priorities of the bond, which centered on improving facilities for students and included a new all-weather track. A $115 million building at the expense of an all-weather track does not fit into the original priorities set by the board. I would hope to use the board's original list of priorities as a guide on how to move forward. For those unaware of the number of students affected by this decision, the track is used by nearly every one of the 1,400 students at San Luis Obispo High School. Track and field is immensely popular as a participation sport. Boys and girls track combined is the largest sport on campus with 130 kids taking part. Track is all-inclusive. Everyone can participate. No one is excluded. The track is also a classroom. All 800-plus children at San Luis Obispo High School who participate in PE utilize the track consistently year-round. The track is also a community resource. There was a junior high school track meet last weekend. There were 49 heats of the 100 meters. That means 400 kids participate in that one event. The track is the most consistently used athletic facility on campus year-round. and deserving of being renovated to current standards. I would like to encourage the board to stays true to its original priorities of the bond money, which is to provide students with a modern physical learning environment and includes a new all-weather track. Foregoing a new track in favor of the existing antiquated dirt track defeats this goal. I would like the board to please make the track a priority on their list.
Thank you.
Okay. The second one I have is a lot less talking. I'm just curious how the funds for the proposed salaries, and this is what it was the management staff. My understanding is that none of the bond money was to use to pay for staff. I'm just curious where the money's coming from.
No, we're unable to comment or answer questions to public comment because they're not agended items.
Well, okay. No, it is. This is an agenda item.
I'm so sorry. This is the one that's Measure D. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was my comment. I was just curious where
Yeah. Perfect. Okay.
Does that get brought up later?
And Mr. Rubio, if you'd like to wait until that item, we could discuss it then.
Okay.
Or if you'd like, I can contact you in the morning and we can talk about the specifics.
That'd be fun.
Of how we're doing that.
Okay.
Yeah. What would you like?
I can reach out to email you in the morning.
Right. Sounds good.
Would that be okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I get your phone number?
Yes. It's actually on that.
No, I have it right here.
Okay.
Got it.
Thank you very much.
I will call you in the morning.
Okay. You guys have a great day.
Thank you, Mr. Rubio.
Go back to 3. Just don't worry about it. Just give him a couple extra seconds.
Okay, so if Mr. Rubio then has completed his comments, William Smith, followed by Karen Smith.
Good evening. Thank you very much. I was ecstatic when I heard that Measure D was proposed, and like Joe Rubio, saw that there was a track and field was one of the major items on there. I've been a resident of San Luis Obispo since 1989. I've been a homeowner in San Luis Obispo, paying my fair share of taxes since 1997. I have 3 children. I have a son that's just graduating this year on the track team. He's going to be going to Chico State. I have another son who participated in the Skills USA thing with Mr. Fay. He's a freshman this year, and I have a daughter in 4th grade at Los Ranchos. She'll be class of 2023 for Slo High School. So I was excited to hear about that. I think this is great. I'm a track and field coach at Slo High as well. I'm an assistant coach. I've been helping here for 3 years. I've also been in the business. My degree is in marketing. I ran at LSU in track and field. My whole career has been in track and field. So the reason that we need, again, voting for the classrooms, great, the cafeteria is great, all that is great, also the track and field facilities, just like Joe said. Track and field is the largest participant sport at Slo High School, with over 10% of the students using it. Also, the facility is also used for football. That's another huge part in the first trimester. And then you also have soccer, which will have probably 80 kids using the fields, also some of the track area in the second trimester. So the field, that's one of the most important facilities on campus. The other thing that's exciting to hear about getting a track was at Slo High School, it's a huge disadvantage right now with the current facility that we have. It's 440-yard track. It was made back in the 60s, I believe. Very old track. Now we can have a new all-weather track. We can practice our relay exchanges. We can practice our hurdles. You know, when you hurdle, you have so many steps you're supposed to take through hurdles. Well, on a cinder track, you can only take 4 steps because it's not a responsive surface. But when we go to CIF, we're competing, or Mount SAC relays or Arcadia, our athletes are at a disadvantage because they're faster tracks. Our timing is off on going over hurdles. To relay exchanges, we have league this Thursday. Again, because the faster tracks, we're competing on a Atascadero, or when we go to CIF, we don't have any place to practice our relay exchanges. It's important to have a new, nice, modern 21st century track. Also, though, with our jumping areas, we do not have a high jump apron. I'm the jumps coach, and I cannot train high jumpers properly because either we're jumping off of grass or we're jumping off of asphalt. Not very safe and not very good for our athletes. Also, our It would be so. That's nice. if we can get those things, we can also make the facility to where we can host events. Right now, we can only have a dual meet here. And even then, it's kind of shady. If we spend the right money and have the right experts designing the facility, we can now host meets. Sorry.
That's all right. I can give you just a little bit to wrap up if you'd like.
Okay, so we can host meets. There are, like Joe said, we have the youth meet, the junior high meet. We have. I'm also a coach with Slowtown Track Club, where we train elementary, junior high, and high school kids year-round in track and field. Right now, we don't have a facility that we can use. Community, this would be a great facility where we could train the kids throughout the whole city. So it is important to the community. The community will use it. It was presented that as a community piece, the community is paying for it. We would like to see the track. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And then we have Karen Smith, please.
Thank you. I only listed one thing on my... Oh, it's over already? Gosh. May I speak on two things? Is that possible?
Yep.
Short subjects? Okay. My name is Karen Smith. I'm a longtime substitute teacher in the district. And in my travels around the district, first I want to backtrack. Three of us showed up, all related to track and field, without telling one another that we were coming here to talk about track and field. I didn't initially come to talk about track and field, but I want to now. But what I want to say is that in my travels around the district and seeing the kind of facilities we have, and spending a great deal of time at both Laguna Middle School and Los Osos Middle School and helping with track in both at both those places, Los Osos Middle School is in great, huge need of repair and help in terms of facilities. I begged the manager of the grounds, Arnie Salachi, to please put lines on Los Osos Middle School track. He, with my help, we provided helpers. He was able to do that. It was the first time his men had said they had ever lined the track in the 20 years that they've been working there. That tells you how little attention Los Osos Middle School gets in terms of that. Also, if you want to compare the two middle schools, they do not have a shot put ring, which I desperately need. I'm a throws coach, and they don't have a long jump area. Right now, the kids are jumping into a former rubble area that has a tiny bit of dirt, maybe a foot of dirt over it. So if they jump into that enough times, they end up landing on glass and or other pieces of rubble that were just put in that pile and covered up. So if it could be at all arranged, it'd be great to have a long jump pit made and a shot put ring added to Los Osos Middle School. That'd be awesome. So I've talked to the guys. They don't think it'll take very much. We do know people that are in construction that would be glad to help. I would be glad to help do the labor. I'm sure we can find enough people that would be glad to contribute to that track. And we've had the most people we've ever had come out for track, to my knowledge. We've had 41 kids come out for track this year at Los Osos Middle School, and that's the... For the population we have, that's a huge amount, and they're all very enthusiastic. So that's what I want to say on that subject. But so can I continue, or should I stop?
I think it should have been two separate
right
requests, because
and I was trying to
this is going to leave you very little time. So let's just start again then, as though we had a second request. And would you follow up with writing a second request?
Yes,
after
yes, ma'am.
Done.
Okay. No problem. Okay.
Now.
All right. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
Mrs. Sheffer has to do it all.
Okay. So the main reason I came was because a longtime teacher in the district, John Geiselbrecht, has passed away, and he spent many years at Laguna Middle School and Hawthorne as well. And even after his diagnosis of stage 4 cancer, he continued to teach and want to teach, and even in up until the last month of his life, passed away March 30th. He continued and wanted to teach, and he has had a huge impression on all the kids that have come through Laguna Middle School and Hawthorne, for that matter. And we really would like to, a lot of us, the staff there, and I kind of consider myself an exterior part of the staff, we would like to have something more concrete, if you will, at Laguna Middle School, if possible. I have asked various people, and the answer I'm getting is that people might object, which I don't agree with, and many of us don't agree with. But at the minimum, we were thinking naming the leadership room, where he was a longtime leadership teacher, naming it after him would be something we would really like to pursue, if possible, or at least some sort of legend, you know, something to his legend. He was very devoted to his students. They were very devoted to him. I feel somebody that has put in the kind of time that he has put in should be remembered in that way. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so now.
Okay, next on the agenda is we have our superintendent's updates, beginning with business and budget. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, well, Julie Lang is fast at work right now with her door shut almost every day, is going through the budget and, of course, getting things ready, because it really is that key budget time, and you know, closing the books, as well as preparing, working closely with our curriculum staff on the LCAP, which you'll kind of get a glimpse of tonight. A lot of legislation going through Sacramento right now, in terms of everything from funding adult education and whether they should, based on the MOE or the maintenance of effort or some other types of funding. There's a big push, as we talked about before, for the state to be able to use basic aid extra revenues as part of the Prop 98 guarantee, which then cuts funding for everyone else potentially. And it was an interesting dynamic hearing from Bill Moaning at the Chamber of Commerce kind of state of the address the other day, and it, how he talked about how there's in Sacramento right now there's a lot of competing interests for the extra dollars that the state is getting, and how that politically is kind of panning out is they're having a hard time because most of those funds are going towards education, which is great for us, but there's of course a lot of needs throughout the state. So we'll see how that pans out, how it moves forward. And lastly, I'll be attending the May Revise, along with Julie. School Services will be putting that together on May 21st.
Yeah. Thank you. Next, we have our Educational Services update. Mr. Robinette?
Well, I don't want you to think I haven't been doing anything, but I once again, looking at the number of agenda items in the meeting, unless there's questions for me, I don't think I'm going to provide any update. There's a lot in Ed Services that will be covered as we discuss LCAP and report cards and other items, but if there's any questions, I'm happy to entertain them.
Seeing none, we will move on to 7.03, the Measure D update.
So Measure D, of course, is ramping up at both Morro Bay High School, San Luis Obispo High School. Kind of right now, the site committees are taking the big facility master plan ideas, the board priority list, and trying to put a little bit more substance to it in terms of budgets and the reality of what things cost and lining those. And what I'll tell you is that the board priorities are still all in, you know, kind of in play at both sites, which includes a track. And so it's kind of okay, you know, and again, there's a lot of competing interests: performing arts space, science room, the STEAM area, the, you know, lots of different interests. And so putting all that down, putting some dollars together, it's tough, yet our goal is to do all those things on the list. So how we do them, how we get them accomplished will be something that we'll be bringing, you know, ideas to the board. But those site committees are kind of beginning to get form. We will be presenting the Morro Bay High kind of really in-depth plan at our next study session, which I believe is May
22nd.
May 22nd. And then the following month we'll be doing the same for Slo High School. Okay?
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Robin? Does anyone from the public have anything to address regarding this topic at this time? Okay, we are moving on to a resolution. Now, Kristen, you're on for Teacher Appreciation Week.
Yes, this next item is a resolution for Teacher Appreciation Week, which is May 4th through May 8th, so this week. And so the National Education Association and the National Parent Teachers Association have designated this week in honor of teachers, our well-deserved certificated employees. And so the recommendation is that you adopt this resolution.
And I would just state, typically, we often don't read resolutions, but I would like to read this particular resolution. It's not very long, so humor me. This is resolution number 16-14-15, a proclamation designating May 4th through 8th, 2015 as Teacher Appreciation Week. Whereas it is appropriate that we recognize our teachers and express gratitude for the interest and concern they have for our students, and whereas our teachers frequently and often selflessly participate in non-classroom activities that enhance the education of our students, and whereas, along with academic instruction, teachers provide students with valuable guidance, support, and encouragement towards helping students become tomorrow's leaders, and whereas providing quality education to our young people continues to be our never-ending challenge as it represents society's greatest and most lasting gift to new generations, and whereas the future of our state and country depends largely on the work of dedicated and professional teachers, and whereas school teachers are relied upon to ensure that our children receive proper instruction in a wide range of subjects, now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District proclaims May 4 through 8, 2015 as Teacher Appreciation Week and encourages all citizens to participate in observance to express their appreciation. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this? All right. Any discussion among the board? Mrs. Roger.
If there's no discussion, I'll move approval of Resolution 16-14-15, a proclamation designating May 4th through 8th, 2015, as Teacher Appreciation Week.
I'd like to second that.
All right. Mrs. Holmes.
Mrs. Roger.
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry.
Yes.
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Mrs. Shepherd.
Yes.
Mr. Millar.
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Passes 6-0 with one absence.
All right. I see you're not moving. So I am 9.01. Accept 2015-16 Personnel Commission Budget and Notice of Public Hearing.
I'm here for this next item. So the Personnel Commission each year reviews its budget. And so attached, you will find the budget that went to the Personnel Commission at the last meeting. And we are holding a public hearing on May 27th and would appreciate it if you would appoint a board representative to attend that public hearing.
Do we have any, are there any volunteers?
3:30?
All right. I attended last year and it was very interesting, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. All right. Thank you, Mr. Unger.
The Personnel Commission, the Personnel Conference Room.
All right.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can I have a motion, please, to formalize that acceptance of their budget and this appointment?
I'll move acceptance of the Personnel Commission budget and Chris Unger as the board representative to the Personnel Commission.
I'll second. Anyone from the public wishing to speak to this topic? Seeing none, we'll have a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Carries 6-0, one absence. All right. Next, we have item 9.02, increased cafeteria meal prices.
Yes, Kathy is here to
update the board on kind of why this agenda item has come forward. It's an interesting time in food service, let's say, right? As Kathy has kind of battled over the last few years with new regulations, federal regulations, what we can do. If you didn't notice the food truck, Morro Bay High student when he spoke, Kathy had to cover her ears. So hopefully Mr. Pruitt's not in too much trouble for allowing that on campus, but he'll be okay. I can't emphasize enough how tough her job has become due to the requirements and things. And so to Kathy's credit, she's looking at ways to kind of move forward to enhance what we're doing. And really, I will say, after Kyle met with you at Morro Bay High School to kind of talk about the potential of a new kitchen, was just energized by you know, kind of your energy and your enthusiasm to make some great changes for the kids. So that said, I'm going to have her present this item.
We're requesting to have an increase in prices for middle and high school students only, not elementary students. And we're asking for a 25 cent increase for both breakfast and lunch, which would make the price of breakfast for middle and high school children $2 and the price for lunch $3. What's happened is the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010 has put on new regulations, and the biggest one has increased our food prices. So whole grains are significantly more money than just regular grains. Every child for every meal has to take a minimum 1/2 cup fruit or vegetable. So for every tray that goes out, we're providing a piece of fruit on that tray, which is great. We're giving the kids healthier food, but healthier food costs more money. So the main reason why we would like to increase at just those two levels and not the elementary is the guidelines are different. As the children's age increases, the requirements that we have to give the children also increase. So, for example, an elementary child is only 350 to 500 calories for their meal for breakfast. A high school student is 600 calories. Mm-hmm. So obviously that means more food. And the same applies at lunch as well. So an elementary calorie range is 500 to 650 calories, whereas a high school range is 700 to 850 calories. So there again, it just means more food for the high school children. But we are doing things to try and increase participation. We've been having the Kiwanis do barbecues at the high schools and middle schools. So that's a way to try and keep the kids on campus. I spend a lot of time just talking to the kids. What do you want? What can we do? How can we, you know, keep you on campus? What can we do better? And I love kids because they just tell it like it is. So, you know, they'll tell you what they want, what they don't want. So, for example, in June, we're going to try something at Hawthorne they want to try. They've come up with a Taco Paradise Bar, and that's what they want. So we can do that. We can come up with something fairly similar to, not quite Chipotle level, but maybe something similar, and offer things kids that they want. So we're moving forward. We're following their guidelines that the government has set, and some of them are pretty extreme. The sodium guidelines are just now starting to come into effect, and if it continues in 5 years, it's going to be half of what the children get right now for a sodium level. And I'm not quite sure the kids are getting that same sodium level in the public when they eat at home or when they eat out, but we have to follow these guidelines. So that is my request.
Okay. Any discussion from anyone from the public wanting to talk about this topic? All right, we'll come back to the board, Ms. Eisendreth Rogers and Mr. Unger.
Kathy, I appreciate the challenge you have with trying to meet the federal standards. And also, I do understand the larger quantity costs more money. But I think it's a curious business model for us to consider trying to keep more students on campus eating the food that we provide for them and charging more for it. It seems as though that will drive more students off campus to shop elsewhere for the, you know, the lesser amount of money. And I think we have a goal that in addition to selling the food, that about keeping our students on campus, about making them want to stay there and engage with other students and participate in class clubs. And so I just, I have a hard time voting for an increased amount of money to charge our students and hope that they will still stay and do this. I was wondering if you have any alternative thoughts, like, I know the food truck's off the table, but I don't know, maybe vendors in the community who could provide pizzas and such things that would, you know, mm-hmm. that we think would keep the students where we really want them to be and not have to wait until we build a larger cafeteria to accommodate them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we currently do have outside vendor, the Domino's and Pizza La Nova in town that provide our pizza for our students. It is a special school formula, so it's not the same slice of pizza that they would get if they went to Domino's. It's whole grain, low fat, low sodium slice of pizza under a calorie limit. I would say in the surrounding communities, the price of lunch at the middle and high schools is also $3. So, for example, Paso Robles, Templeton, Lompoc, and Lucia Mar are all in the $3 range for lunch for the older grades. So I don't think it's terribly out of line with what other school districts are doing. It's tough to compete. You know, when Morabe High is within walking distance of 10 restaurants and, you know, the kids can go there and get food. So it's tough to compete. We're trying many, many things.
As a follow-up question to those other schools, do they have closed campuses?
Some do, some don't. So Paso Robles is a closed campus. Lompoc is an open campus. I think Lucia Mar is open campus as well, and I don't know about Templeton.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Unger, then Mr. Millar.
My understanding is that you're what's called an enterprise fund. Is that true? An enterprise fund being a fund that has to has to make its way without subsidies from the general fund. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I think when I looked at, I think our last budget projection, there was concern actually that you guys were not going to be able to make it given the income. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Miller.
Well, it's interesting, Chris, because there used to be a fund that we borrowed from into the general fund for many years until you got help planning meals and stuff from a lot of people. So the normal safeguards about children who need extra support for meals, they will remain in place and won't be impacted by this increase.
No.
Okay. And how much does lunch cost at the hot dog place? Does anybody know? I mean, Frank's? Yeah, Frank's. You think I'd have the name association.
I would say probably $5 to $6 would be my guess.
And we have a pretty good idea what Taco Bell runs. I think it's. I'm not sure we're going to influence behavior through pricing in our cafeteria meals, mm-hmm. because I think there is a more complex dynamic involved in students going off campus for lunch.
I agree.
But I do think that, and given the rules for the fund, we better give you what you need in order to meet those rules. Mm-hmm. So I would support the increase.
And I just want to commend food services because over many years I've seen high school lunches, and I would say that there's been a noticeable improvement in lunches in the last 6 or 7 years, and salad bars and so forth mm-hmm. like that. And I think those are huge. And I think Mr. Millar is right. The answer to the question is, why do students leave campus to go to lunch? It's because they can.
Mm-hmm. And I would simply add that I think that in my experience from observing the food in the cafeteria and knowing where the kids go, that the healthiest alternative is to stay on campus if they chose to do so. They don't go to, whatever it's called now, was Scolari's and Albertson's, now it's something else. Mm-hmm. They're not buying salad and fruit there. And the same at when they go to the little coffee places or to Frank's, they're making choices that are more expensive and less healthy for the most part. So I will support it as well. Any further discussion? We need anyone wishing to make a motion?
I'll move approval of the food increases requested for secondary level.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
All right, we have 5 in favor, 1 no, and 1 absence. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have 9.03, Measure D, approve the contract for communication services. Dr. Prater.
We were so excited and fortunate to pass our bond at 72%, or virtually 72% of the vote. And what came out of that was a promise to keep our community informed as to what we're doing. And what we know is that the next phase of that measure includes spending the public dollar. And in doing that, I believe we have an obligation to communicate very clearly what we're doing and the status of where we're at. And that is a complex task, when, especially as we begin to move forward in the projects. And now we're really very much still at the very beginning. And as you heard tonight in public comment, people are quick to come out because the word that travels the rumors, if you will, that get out there are sometimes unvetted. Sometimes they come out of meetings that are not meant to be final meetings, but process-related meetings. And so the need to communicate very clearly with our public is going to only get greater. And so what I have before you tonight is a recommendation to approve a contract with Stephanie Bertoke Communications. Stephanie is over there in the audience, and she specializes in project construction communication services. So her specialty is being able to unpack the complexity that exists within contracts, within actions by the board, within meetings and process, and find a way to communicate that in simple terms to the community. What I have before you is a desire to do two things. One is to contract with Bertoke Communications to develop a dedicated website for Measure D construction program specifically. It will be linked to our district's website, so anyone in the public, anyone in the community will have a place to go that has all the information you could ever imagine, all the way back to our bond language when we first began. So all those commitments we made to the public many, many months ago will be there. How we have kept to our word and worked through those commitments will be detailed in this website. In addition to that, because we know that that's not just enough, there's a second component to this contract, which really is 20 to 30 hours as a beginning, a base, if you will, to reach out to key groups like the Tribune, key stakeholder groups, to inform them specifically what it is we're doing. And press releases, social media entries, e-blasts, things that that we know get the message out to the community as accurately as we can. So tonight is a good example as to why I believe we need this proposed contracted agreement, because it is a big fish. It's going to require some skill and an ability to know what kind of information really needs to be out in the public. And the board needs to have that level of confidence. The community deserves it, and that's what this contract is asking for, and I believe provides.
Thank you. First, is there anyone from the public wishing to speak on this topic? All right. Mr. Rapucci.
I live in Morro Bay, and I really have a concern about what Dr. Prater was expressing. Our community is crying out, saying, what's going on? What's going on? And no one knows what's going on. There's very little input from the community in this process. And I know some of that can't be done, but other times it can. I think it's really important, since all over the both cities did a vote to get schools up to a 21st century, that we really do need to take this opportunity now and get the community, not just inform them, but get them involved in some of these decision-making processes, such as misconceptions or true conceptions of, like, the fields. So I do want to add to that that we cannot let this go by. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right, we'll come back to the board. Any discussion? Mr. Unger, then Ms. Eisendrath Rogers.
I was going to move approval of item 9.03.
I had more discussion, if
sure.
I may. Dr. Prater, could you speak to the question that was raised earlier by the speaker regarding the use of salaries and the wording of the measure?
The commitment in the bond process is that no bond proceeds could be used for administrative salaries, okay? Or for teachers' salaries. So it's very specific to the construction process itself. It does, however, allow for the cost of project program management. And so what we're proposing under the program management next item is to do that in-house and use a portion of those proceeds dedicated to program management, which is allowable under the bond. Okay? If we were to go out to do program management, it would be three times the cost, if not more. So part of the difference, which I'll explain to Mr. Rubio in the morning, is that this bond measure does allow for program and contract and construction management costs, which we intend to do internally by bumping up the existing employees into a dedicated role of program management, which it allows. The entire salary won't be paid for in Measure D, just a portion of it dedicated to those program management roles.
Just in regards to this.
Yeah. Oh, but this one, this contract is general fund. Yes, not Measure D. I'm sorry.
Mrs. Roger?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that while Measure D can pay for things directly related to Measure D and the construction under Measure D, I asked the question today and received from Mr. Pinkerton the answer that Ms. Berto's contract would be from the general fund and not Measure D dollars.
Correct.
So that, Mr. Rapucci, I think maybe that answers your question.
So I can just let the board know that I did talk to our bond attorney, basically, so Bill Cady, about this and expenditures and things, and he basically equated it to a couple of things. Is it necessary to complete the project? Is having a communication plan necessary to completing buildings on our two schools? So the answer would be no, right? And so because of that, I mean, that's a board goal. It's something we want to do and reach out and do forward. So it really doesn't fit under the bond expense. Program management is absolutely necessary to complete projects, which is the next board item, which we'll go through. And I actually have an attorney general opinion that Bill sent to me, which kind of outlines that, which we'll, we can share with Mr. Rubio as well.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Just to clarify a few things, this is in the area of informing the public, keeping them informed as to how things are going and where we are at in the various stages. Mr. Pinkerton, could you kind of reiterate for us again how we are soliciting and encouraging public input?
Well, just so that everybody knows, the board has study sessions. We've had them monthly for the past 5 months, and those are completely open to the public, where we've talked about most of the items that have come up today and throughout the process of the board developing the priorities for the bond was completely open meetings for people to give input, to be part of it. We had developed a facility master plan. We currently have site committees at both Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School that have members of the community, have parents, have students, have staff who are also working through these items and looking at different options. And you know, it's gone a little bit smoother, I would say, at Morro Bay High School in terms of the path. San Luis High took a little veer off because they had some ideas, and we checked them out for them. And now we're kind of back on the board priority list about where we're going and moving forward. And so, again, Morro Bay High School board study session, where intense look at what's been planned, where the school is at, will be on the 22nd of May. Anyone can attend that open meeting. And then we'll be doing the same for San Luis Obispo High School the following month.
Thank you.
Mr. Unger.
And I just would remind people that we are only allowed to complete projects which were on the list when we did the election. So any notion that we're doing things off the list, I think, is a fiction, and we would be sued for that and lose, absolutely.
Absolutely.
The second thing I just want to remind everybody is that I believe one of our board priorities is to increase communication within our communities. And so I see this as another way of us doing that, and that's another reason I'm absolutely supporting this.
Okay, we have a motion, and now we have a second by Mr. Millar. Any further discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Carries 6-0 with one absence. All right, next. Item 9.04, Measure D, Decision on Project Management Option.
So this has actually been a topic at two of our board study sessions in terms of talking about how are we going to do the construction management of our projects. So through those discussions, we've looked at kind of three different options. One would be to go with an outside firm, a construction management firm who came in and would just run the entire program. The opposite of that would be for us to go completely in-house and to have our own, you know, people within our facilities department that would be the project managers, would do the construction management. And then there's kind of a middle step, which is kind of a hybrid, what we've called a hybrid, where we have our inside facility, you know, individuals within our facility department who would help us with contract management, as well as potentially also doing some contracted services to help us in delivering all of our projects over the next, you know, 5 to 7 years through the Measure D program. Mr. Palazzo's came up during those study sessions and kind of talked about it. And as Dr. Prater alluded to, is that basically, I mean, you're looking at double to triple the cost by going outside. So that said, as a board, you're going to want to know that you have people within the organization who can do it, should we choose to go down that road and have those services, program management, done in-house. I feel like we do have a great team with some of our recent hires here at San Luis Coastal, with the addition of Mr. Holcomb helping us with his services as well and kind of guiding our facilities department and our Measure D team. So it's... In terms of the in-house part, what we're looking at today to kind of get started with the program is for Mr. Palazzo, who's our current Director of Facilities Maintenance Operation, that due to the increased responsibilities role, that his tie into Measure D and kind of overseeing all the planning and construction management that he's already begun right now, but nothing's been kind of going forward. He's just doing it as kind of extra part of his job, that we would do kind of a stipend for his position, because he's still going to be doing all of his other, you know, the facility maintenance director position. So those would be things that would continue to be general funded as he did those roles. But these extra assistance things that he would do, he would receive a stipend for that. In talking kind of Gene Keller with personnel, the stipend actually works out better than turning into a new job description and kind of changing things around. It's just an easier thing, because when Measure D construction is over, the stipend would go away. So in talking to Jean and how we should lay this out, that was kind of her best option and the best option for us in terms of moving over for his position. Now, and Kim, if you can pull up the PowerPoint for me, or the PDF.
This one?
Yeah. So if you just go to the second page. So again, as we said,
looking kind of a hybrid model. You can go down to the next page, Kim. So basically, again, Anthony, Director of Facilities Operations, Transportation, Construction, the stipend position for that. The two blue positions would be new positions to the district that would be, in-house people. We would be hiring these individuals. So we would be hiring somebody to oversee kind of facilities construction, so an assistant director, and then also having an administrative assistant, secretarial position, along with payroll and kind of all the extra duties that go along with kind of the program, and as we move forward, would be a kind of an assistant to both the assistant director and director focused on Measure D. At this time, so those are kind of the three areas tonight that we're asking for approval, that we go in-house, we use those three positions. In the future, as the program ramps up and we have construction and we have projects going, we're going to need project managers. We're going to need people that are actually, you know, probably a person that we've talked about, probably one housed at Morro Bay High School, somebody who just oversees the $60 million worth of construction that's going to be happening there. We're also probably going to need somebody at Morro Bay High School, so somebody who, project manager, oversees that project. And then we also have another almost $60 million with developer fees and bond funds for other projects throughout the district. So most likely in the huge wave of tons of construction happening 3-4 years from now, we could get up to ramp up to probably a 3 project manager positions. At this time, in looking at kind of the options of doing that, hiring those people in-house versus doing contracted services or going out to a firm kind of to get project managers, looking at talking to Ron, talking to Anthony, we feel like at this point we want to explore doing more of a contracted method. So there are a lot of positives in that if we, right now, why would we hire a project manager if we don't have a lot of work for them to do? So if it's a contracted position, you know, maybe we start half-time with somebody, maybe it grows into full-time, maybe it's 1.5, you know. So having that ability to contract with individuals would definitely be something that's a positive for us, and we could ramp up, slow down, based on the needs of the district and the construction management program over the course of the years. And by the time you take the salary and you add the benefits, those types of things, we feel like we can, and again, talking to Ron and Anthony, we feel like we can get really solid individuals to do that project management for us. But we're not asking the board to approve those positions today. We're going to vet that out more and probably bring that back to the board in terms of going out for a proposal or doing that in the future. And again, that'll be something that as the projects begin to ramp up, that we'll need those positions. But clearly right now, in looking at, it's already kicking in, mm-hmm. especially the admin assistant, all the different things that are kind of tied into Measure D, getting this information out, meeting with groups, moving forward. These are positions we need to kind of move forward with now to begin our process. Again, these specific positions, because they are tied directly to Measure D, are allowable in terms of using bond funds for them. So I have that attorney general opinion that I can share with the group, talk to our bond counsel, those types of things, because they're directly related. In the end, doing this in-house, this portion of it is going to save us a lot of money, which, again, then leaves more bond dollars for us to do more projects to get more things done. So that, and because we have the individuals that I feel can fit those roles in our district, is the reason why I'm recommending this. Had we not had those individuals to help us move forward and like I felt like they could fill the roles and the needs that we have in terms of construction management, I wouldn't be making the same recommendation to the board. But I really feel like we have the right people in place to be able to do this and ultimately save money throughout the construction management program. So the next one, Kim, you can go down, and again, it's on there, just kind of talks about the specific duties. The Personnel Commission has actually gone through and written up an assistant director position. So the duties assigned to it, those types of things. The director, of course, is kind of extra duties as assigned throughout, and kind of talks about what the director is going to have to do in terms of enhanced extra duties. And then the last one is the administrative assistant. So we have administrative assistants within the district. That job description is already defined. But what happens is that job description for administrative assistant has a little section at the end. And so it has the administrative assistant that works in BG&T, the administrative assistant that works in IS&T, the administrative assistant that works in ISLA. And it has their specific duties that go along for that particular position, but they're all within that administrative assistant position level. In terms of, and so that's one of the things they looked at, was looking at the duties, if you go down, Kim, of what we're asking that person to do, and again, talking to Gene and where this fits within our kind of secretarial job descriptions, that's where it landed, was at the administrative assistant level.
Okay. Is there anyone from the, are you done? Are you ready?
That's
for
pretty much it.
Okay. Anyone from the public wishing to speak on this topic? Right, and the board, Mr. Millar.
Can you tell me how much construction management would cost? Did we get estimates from Banner or any of these other outfits?
So actually, and Kim can make. I mean, I can have Kim pull up the last board study session where we kind of went over the three. Mr. Plaza, you want to join me?
I was there. I was just trying to. I just wanted a dollar.
Yeah, a dollar amount.
Yeah.
With that overall, I believe in-house was about 4%, outside was 9 to 10%.
Yeah, we did an analysis based on a survey of hourly rates and sort of having full-time employees, et cetera, et cetera. And it kind of varied from a factor of 2.5% to 3% all the way up to 5 to 6% of the total bond program, 2% being 2 to 3, 2.5%, I believe it was. Being in-house versus going outside, which was 5 to 6%.
Okay, I remember those. I was just trying to turn it around, but that helps. I'm okay with the in-house, or I guess the hybrid in-house or in-house or outhouse, which are we doing?
It's a hybrid in that the three positions would be in-house people. We hire their San Luis Coastal Unified School District staff. Mm-hmm. The project managers would be contracted positions.
Okay.
So that's why I'm considering it kind of a hybrid situation, not just, we're not going to hire the project managers necessarily in-house. Now, we may come back to the board as we go forward and we look and we try to get people on board and say, hey, you know what, this isn't necessarily working. We may want to try to hire people in-house if that's going to work. But that's, I think that's something that we want to continue to look at as we move forward.
And as far as the number of project managers and when, are they impacted by things like whether or not a project is going to be lease back, thank you, versus other arrangements? Because we're not going to do every project exactly the same way.
No, absolutely not. So what I would say is and Ron or Anthony can talk about it, but the better our relationship in terms of moving forward with a lease-back with a contractor and doing that is going to help us have less project managers.
Okay, so yeah, that's kind of what I was
saying. So having more difficulty in bidding and who we get and how that functions will lead us to need more people overseeing the process and ensuring that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Okay, and I have heard 17 years roughly the amount of time it might take us to do all this construction.
17?
Yeah.
No, seven.
Seven. Oh, 7 to 10. That's what it is. Okay.
I was
five,
you know,
seven. Okay.
5 to 7.
All right. So, and that's good. That's better.
Yes.
That helps my.
Yes.
Well, I just, it's a lot of construction.
No, it's a tough right now too. I mean, just for the process, right? I mean, we didn't have everything all planned out and buildings all designed and ready to go on day one when the bond passed. So it's taking us a good year to get that planning done, to get our models, to know what we're doing. And then we have to turn them into DSA, and that takes an extended period of time. I mean, there's a lot of kind of upfront time that goes into it. So I am looking forward to sharing kind of what we're doing with the public on a better method and getting that information out, because it's not that we're not doing anything. It's just the things that people can't necessarily see digging in the ground yet.
Okay, but where I'm going with this, and it helps that it's 5-7, much better. When we vote on this, we are going to be tying the hands of a board that none of us may be sitting on a few years out. And I'm reluctant to do that. I would like to see some kind of suggestion regarding benchmark review, similar to what we're going to do with Mr. Holcomb's contract.
We can bring this back annually to the board?
Well, you know, I'm more interested in information, and bringing it back to the board may be a desirable or necessary thing, but I'm kind of thinking, okay, one project's done. How do we do? Morro Bay High School has these projects underway. Mm-hmm. How are we doing, both on the management of the construction, the management of the cost,
sure,
change orders, all of those things? Because my experience as a parent and adult taxpayer in the district during the Measure A building was that there was a lot of reluctance and unhappiness with being on board the Banner construction management approach. But we literally had no way to get off of it, as far as I recall, Chris. I don't know if you know, we were sort of committed. So that's my, and I do have faith, and I do support the recommendation. I just want to have some kind of mechanism to be self-checking, so that when one of us, uh-huh, God forbid, departs the board, that we are leaving a good situation for the, yeah, folks that are going to sit here after us.
Oh. Well, the good news I will tell you is that by having employees in-house and doing this in-house, the board can make those decisions at any time.
Very good point. Thank you. And we will.
And we definitely need to, project by project, continually keep the board updated on how things are going, what's happening, what are our soft costs, what are hard costs, what's our overall budget, cash flow. I mean, all of those things, we're going to inundate you over the next 5 to 7 years to make sure that the board knows where we're at, the public knows, as we move forward.
Control funding.
Go ahead. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I spent a lot of time thinking about this, and I really, even as of today, I was undecided on what direction I thought we should go. But for me, the thought that I had today, and I don't want to be morbid, but this is a 30-year or 35-year, the bond.
In terms of payback?
Right.
Probably 30.
Okay, so this is a 30-year encumbrance for the voters of this district. Right, and I'm thinking, yeah, all of us are going to be dead before this bond debt is retired. Frightening.
You're right,
thought,
that is morbid.
It's true. Well, we are going to be. So, you know, we've entered into the debt, and we have a lot of responsibility associated with,
absolutely,
with that 30-year payback and what our constituents get for their money. So what I wrote down here, just my little thoughts, were the extent to which our communities overwhelmingly agreed to fund construction of 21st century facilities. We want as much as possible to have our hands on the funds,
yep,
and our people controlling process, because I believe that they are more inclined to have a higher cost awareness and a desire to, wherever possible, conserve funds without sacrificing quality. So, which is to say that I think I too don't know what went on with Banner and Measure A. It was before my time on the board, but I know that there was a lot of sentiment in the community about kind of a loss of control, or not keeping a good tight hand on the purse strings. I think that we are more likely to be able to achieve that when we use our own people who are committed to our best interests, and our best interests are the best interests of our taxpayers. So I've come to a place where I think I fully support this hybrid in-house approach.
Any further discussion? So you are seeking approval this evening if we're ready?
Just for the three positions?
Yes.
So
yes.
The stipend, the assistant director of facilities construction, so that we can fly that position, and then the administrative assistant, which we can fly as well.
Are we able to do that in one motion, or do we need? All right, we are. So,
Mr. Rubio still want to speak to this?
He spoke before. Is minor? Is Miss? Yes, and Mr. Rubio is not here any longer. I don't believe. Is that right? Yeah, Mr. Rubio has left the building. All right.
Okay. We will contact him tomorrow and share all this information.
Thank you.
As well as that Attorney General.
Thank you.
And just one more quick. So as these projects happen and are completed and the workload or the projects are completed, stipends and additional benefits go away?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Good.
And it's my understanding one of the reasons for contracting these services is that they don't have to be laid off, that we don't
for the project managers.
For the project managers, yes, for those positions. All right, Mr. Unger.
I was going to make a motion to approve item number 9.04.
I'll second. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Oh, Mr. Quesenberry. Any opposed? It carries 6-0. All right, 9.05, approve assistant coach stipends.
So as we witnessed tonight with SkillsUSA and FFA, our co-curricular and extracurricular activities play an important role in connecting secondary students with their school. As someone who once had a stint as an athletic and activities director, I know that athletics are certainly one of the things that most connect students with their overall high school experience. Out of our roughly 2,200 high school students, we have nearly 1,400 of them at this point participating in sports, which is probably a record number. It's awesome. At our schools, we depend on varsity head coaches, and then depending on the sport, an assistant coach or two to run lower division levels. Our high school principals and athletic directors will tell you, and have been saying it for some time, that because of our numbers of our participants, we are at a safety, competitive, and supervisorial disadvantage at this point. It is our recommendation that we add 14 assistant coaching stipends to each of our two comprehensive high schools, 28 positions. We would expect that those stipends are distributed equitably to boys and girls sports per Title IX regulations, but that they can be flexibly used as the high schools deem consistent with the number of participants and the needs in particular sports. So, for example, if at any given year there are not enough students to field a freshman-level baseball team, as has happened sometimes, there would be no need for an additional stipend for that sport. But if 50 extra students show up for track and field, that would be an appropriate place for another assistant. The personnel department, as with all stipends, would have oversight over these decisions. The cost of these 28 stipends is estimated to be under $60,000. That's a flexible number because, you know, there's a lot of turnover in coaching, but there's, you know, extra levels that are added if people do extra years of service. But that entry-level assistant coaching stipend is a little over $2,000 under the current contract. Both of our athletic directors, Mr. Brandow and Mr. Andre, are here to answer specific questions you might have about athletics or these needs. But it is our recommendation that we add this at this time because as we kind of gear up for the summer and fall sports, that we would be putting these in place with the next fiscal budget.
Thank you. Anyone from the public wishing to speak on this? All right, we'll come back to the board. Any board discussion? Mr. Quesenberry?
want to speak in favor of this, and I really hoped that we could get those athletic directors up here so we could grill them appropriately. They're sitting back there with smiles on their faces. But as a person who's spent much of his teaching career as a coach, and most often as assistant coach, occasionally head coach, I know that this has been an issue in this district for a long time. And so I'm glad these gentlemen are in front of us, and I hope we have lots of questions for them.
John will answer all of them.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jenny.
Mrs. Roger.
Well, I was going to say that as much as I would like to require Mr. Andre to come forward and speak, I'm willing to move approval, or I would be happy to move approval of item 9.05.
Do we have a second?
Yes, I'll second that.
We'll just have to grill him some other time.
Any further discussion?
Well, I would just like to hear a few words from you just for the public to appreciate, because I know that we all appreciate everything you do and everything that our assistant coaches do. But could you speak to that, please?
Sure. I don't know if you know, but things have changed drastically in athletics here in the last few years, and one of the things is that they don't have starting dates anymore. So we're asking our coaches to coach all year round. And we're finding it more and more difficult to find qualified applicants that are volunteers that want to put that much time in. And we also are seeing our numbers explode with athletes, and it's to the point now where you have like one golf coach out there with 35 kids. And then when he takes the varsity off to golf, he has to cancel practice because he doesn't have an assistant. So just the way things are going and the amount of kids that we have playing, we think there's a big necessity to get more coaches involved. And when there is a stipend attached to it, there's a lot more accountability with their attendance and the fact that they take a little more ownership than just being a volunteer and show up when they can. So it's a very big need for us in the athletic department.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree with what John just said. Our schools, the numbers are growing. If we have a pool on campus and the athletic department's going to continue to grow. Every year at the end of the year, I have an exit meeting with every varsity head coach. And this is my third year here. And the number one need every single time I sit down with all 22 varsity coaches is, what can I help you with? What can I do? 1A every single time is, I need more help. I need more coaches. I know that John and I have worked on this a lot behind the scenes. I really appreciate Mr. Robinette's support on this, and this is really, really important to us. I literally have coaches texting me in the back of the room, waiting to hear what you guys decide, because this is a big deal. If you guys do pass it, I want to thank you for supporting our coaches and supporting our kids, and I hope we can continue to represent you guys in the community well.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
William Smith, I'm the jumps coach at San Luis Obispo High School, and exactly what he says, I'm one jumps coach. I'm coaching approximately 25 kids, and we just had our league meet this past week with the JV. I was busy with the triple jump, helping my triple jump JV boys, and I had some girls on the long jump pit, and there were also some boys jumping, high jumping, and another group on the pole vault. I'm one person. I had to dedicate my time to my triple jumpers and my female long jumpers. My high jumpers, I couldn't get over there at this because the events were at the same time, conclusively. And then the girls, we didn't have a girls pole vaulter at the time. But this Friday, we do. I'm going to have to be at the pole vault pit, the high jump pit, the triple jump pit, and the long jump pit at the same time. It would be great to have another jumps coach. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Any other questions? Okay. So we have a second. All right. So we're ready to go. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And thank the rest of your coaches for us. Yes. Thank you. All right. At this time, I'm going to propose taking a 6-minute break until 8:00.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. Take a quick break. topic is 9.06, update on elementary standards-based report card pilot. Yes, we're ready.
All righty. Good evening, board. As you know, we've been piloting the elementary standards-based report card this year at all 10 of our elementary schools in all of our K through 6th grade classrooms. And as part of our pilot, we surveyed both our parents in the district as well as our teachers to get some feedback and guide our next steps in revising and improving our report card process. And after we did this, we brought the results of that survey back to the grading consortium. And tonight you're going to hear a little bit about the work that they've been doing to make the revisions and really put this project all together. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to our K-6 Elementary Assessment TOSA, Darla Batistic.
Thank you for inviting us here today to tell you about this exciting project. It's been quite a process, and this felt very monumental, the meeting that we just had in April with our grading consortium, because we've come a full year cycle and have done some amazing work. This is our group of our grading consortium members, and we added a few members this year because we had some people move grade levels and some people retire and all kinds of things. So we added a couple members so that we would have representation at every grade level from every school site, and including teachers, EL specialists, special day class resource teachers, and principals, coaches. It was quite a large group of people and an amazing group of minds. They really did a lot of hard work. What was that hard work? This was what we set out to do. So I know it sounds like what we did was make a new report card, and we did, and it's in use. But there were so many other things that were related to creating a new report card, and we looked at our work as actually developing a new grading system. And these are the components that we've worked on. Are they all done? No. But the first one is our standards-based report card, as Mrs. Shields shared with you, is in place. Our teachers and parents and students have had two opportunities to see them as a tool for evaluation. We'll use it one more time at the end of this year, and then we'll make some revisions and refine it for next year's process. The other items on there are under under progress also, some more so than others, and as we go through tonight the feedback that we got, I'll let you know what the status is of some of these things as we go through. So just a reminder, when we started as a consortium, we thought, what is our work and what's going to guide our process? And so we came up with a set of big ideas. They were gleaned from research about best grading practices and also from some interests of our consortium and our teachers in San Luis Coastal. So we let these big ideas guide every decision that we made. We revisited them on our April meeting because we were going to make some decisions based on a wide range of feedback. So we washed them through these big ideas and said, are they consistent with what we set out to do before we took any actions or made any recommendations? This slide here is a reminder. I think I've shared it with you before. We were transitioning from a traditional grading system into a standards-based grading system. And this slide outlines some of the big differences in those two systems. And I point this out tonight because when we cast that net of feedback from all of our stakeholders, we noticed there's a great variety of feedback, and we had just a tremendous response from parents. We had over 700 responses from parents, and we had about 80 responses from our elementary teachers. So one of the things we noticed, that a lot of the feedback that didn't quite fit with our vision and our big ideas came from this piece of information. Some of the feedback and some of the recommendations were living in the traditional grading system area. And so that kind of focused us on the fact that additional education is needed for our community so that people understand what is standards-based grading and how it's different and why it's different and why it's a powerful way to measure student performance. So I shared that with you. I shared that with you again. So here's what we did this year at the end of our after we deliberately did it after our second conference time so that teachers, parents, students would all have two opportunities to see a report card before they provided that feedback to us. We took that feedback and we looked and reviewed it for district trends. So what were lots of people saying? What were those topics that were the hot topics or things that we probably need to pay some attention to? Then we looked at it to identify school trends and grade level trends for two reasons. One, I think the grade level trends help us figure out what's that work we need to do to make each grade level right and consistent. And also at our school sites, are some school sites struggling with one aspect more than another? And is additional education needed there at the school, at that school community? And so teachers and school sites, we had a great process where people met at grade level, then they'd move and they'd meet with their school site, and we kept going back and forth in a kind of accordion process to deal with the feedback and try to figure out what our next steps were. It was quite an exciting day. From there, we decided what revisions to make. Which revisions did we need to make now? Which things did we want to think about maybe for future and sit with for a little bit, and I'll share what some of those were and some of those are. And we began planning our next steps and actually making some revisions already. Kinder and first grade teachers have completely revised their ELA section of their report card and the assessments and criteria that go along with it. So it was exciting. The other grade levels will be working on it so that things are in place, so that many things will be in place before fall next year. So what did we do with all that feedback? Well, we read everything. Every bit of that feedback we read so that we could start to see what those trends were. And we passed it through a few things. First of all, we said, does it meet our criteria? So we went back to that. Is it standards-based grading? Is this a comment or feedback that helps us further our work in standards-based grading? Was it frequently occurring? Did lots of people say this, or is this a onesie-twosie thing? Is this one school site saying it, or are all the school sites saying it? We also looked through that feedback for ideas. We had lots of great ideas in the feedback, and those are the things that you kind of want to pull out and say, hey, this would be really fun to implement. This would be a good thing. Let's work on this project because I think it would help everybody understand it better. And then also, is more education needed? So was it a comment that led us to understand that more education was needed? And we did a lot of breathing as we read that feedback because there was a lot of it. And as you know, in collecting feedback as an organization, there's a lot of negative feedback. There's a lot of positive feedback. There's a lot of feedback completely in contention with each other. So you have the group saying, I think this, and the group saying the exact opposite, I think that. So we had to have a process for filtering through that. And we really focused, as I said, on those four questions there to help us use that feedback in a most productive manner. So I think you have a copy of this chart. I think both of the charts we gave you a copy of. We sent a survey. This is the parent feedback one first we'll take a look at. And we sent a survey of, I think it was 8 questions. They were the same questions we asked last year as we were beginning to implement the report card of our parent groups. And we measured it on a Likert scale. So 1 is strongly disagree near the bottom. 5 is strongly agree up near the top. And then we took all of the responses and kind of did a rating average. And so you can see our responses were kind of about in that same area, in that high 3, one a little lower than that, and one a little higher. So we look for sort of those things that are those outliers, if you will. And we thought that one of the things we noticed is one of the lowest agreeability rankings came with a 4-point rubric, and that matched the feedback, the comments that parents made also. There were lots and lots and lots of things said about the 4-point rubric. more about that in a minute. And then we also noticed the 4.18, the most agreeable thing parents had to say was that conference was just the best way for me to get to know the report card and my students' work and everything. And we know that about parent conferences. They're very valuable. We also took a look at each of the individual questions, and we looked for where do most of the answers lie. And in the parent feedback, the agree category was by far where most responses lived in all of the questions. They only popped four of them up there, but that was part of our process. We also looked at the spread of answers just to see, you know, is there a big chunk in agree and strongly agree? Where are those answers living so that we could get a feel for that data? And then we took that analysis after reading all the comments, and then we came up with our list of what are those district trends for parent comments. And here's what we landed on. Lots of comments about the range of a 3 and a 4. The language on the report card, when we designed the report cards, we designed it with Common Core standard language on the report card. We thought that was a great educational piece and tool for both parents and for teachers. Parents said some of it's hard for me to understand because it is in standard language. And the standards are rigorous and complex, so it made sense. There was a lot of comments about assessment and the criteria used for grading, and parents would like to see more of that, more evidence of what their students can do and what makes it a 3. And why isn't it a 4? And why is it a 2? And how do we navigate that? And we knew that going in. We had many assessment pieces in place, but we also still had some missing. And teachers have done an amazing job of kind of filling in those areas of assessments that they know are great for classrooms and help them evaluate student work. And so we're developing that. And then overwhelmingly, the parent feedback was about how can I help my student? And we live in a community that we're so fortunate that we have so much parent involvement and parent support that I wasn't surprised by that question. Parents want to know, great, this is the report card. How do I help my student? And so as we continue into teaching the Common Core, parents and teachers and students are going to be more familiar with what that looks like. And I think that all of those bottom three are all tied to our understanding and learning about the Common Core over the course of the next few years. Continuing. It'll be continuing. So then we took a look at our teacher feedback, and we asked almost the same questions. We added a couple to the far left side there for teachers that were specific about English language arts and math and those areas on the report card, because that's what teachers wanted to revise and make some tweaks to, and nothing major, just things to make it make a little more sense for everyone. So we looked at that data, and again, we saw that most of it was pretty agreeable, but we had two strong dips. Coincidentally, the four-point rubric. So teachers had a lot to say about the 4 and the 3, the level of the 3 and the level of the 4. And then a little surprising to us was the 3.09 rating average for the question about the information in a section of our report card called Interdisciplinary Studies, and it's where we group science, social studies, history, PE, music, visual and performing arts, that area of our report card. And it was interesting because the comment feedback about that area went along with it, but it was two kind of different things. One was in the way we grade it, and one was in the lack of detail in that area. So our report card in English language arts and math is detailed, a lot of detail. And then you get to interdisciplinary studies and there's less detail. So that was understandable as to what those comments were there. We summarized the trend in teacher comments to see if there were some commonalities between teachers and parents, and you'll notice a lot of the same things came up. So as I go through this list includes everything that was on the parent list except the how can I help my students, and I'll tell you about that also in a minute. But as I go through this list, I'll tell you what we did next. The grading consortium discussed each of these items and made an action plan, made a recommendation. This is what I think we should do in this area, and this is what we should do in the next area. So I'm going to go through those now and kind of tell you where we landed on these. As far as the range of the 3 and 4 are concerned, everyone wanted to kind of pull the level 3 up. Level 3 means that I have mastered those standards. I'm meeting expectation. And so they felt like that at our first glance that that band was a little too low, that there were some kids earning 3s that we didn't really feel were quite there, and that we wanted to set those expectations a little bit higher. And we do that with the way assessments look or the way kids score on an assessment. So they wanted kids to be a little bit stronger to really earn a 3. And then the 4 used to be exceeds expectations. And the criteria for that was that a student needed to be a year above grade level, quite a bit, quite a distance above grade level. And really the target was for students to be earning 3s that they have met the grade level standards. So that 4 was very elusive. And that was the feedback from teachers and from parents and students. We heard a lot about, like, well, students are a little discouraged because it's this 4, and what is it? It's out there, and I can't get it. So that made sense. That made sense to everything that we're trying to do in elementary school, which is teach the grade level curriculum and extend students within that grade level curriculum through deep and meaningful activities, but within the grade level. So we brought that 4. The consortium decided to bring the 4 back into the span of grade level work. And we changed the language on it, and we're working on exactly the descriptor right now, what it will say. But it will be excels at a grade level standard. So it'll be students that are just demonstrating that top mastery of that standard consistently over time, and in deep and meaningful ways. And I think that that's going to shore up the comments that we had about the 3 and 4. We're in the middle of a year of grading, so those changes won't take effect until next fall when we start our new report card. We'll change the language and we'll change the explanation of what the 3 and 4 is. And that's some of the work that our kinder and first grade teachers have already done to say, okay, well then what would a 4 look like if not that, and now it looks like this, what would it be? The language and items on the report card, the language, again, was parent-friendly language, and the items were, do we need all of the items that were on there, and could a couple of those be trimmed just to make the report card a little more readable? The grading consortium, interesting on language, landed on not maybe changing it yet. We're putting together some prototypes that are parent-friendly, and then we're going to take them back and take a look at them and say, did we water it down too much? Have we been able to maintain what the Common Core actually says and the rigor of that? So we're going to take a look at something, if we can find something in between. But what we decided to do with that right now is develop some prototypes and then maybe see where we are after another year of everyone getting used to the report card. Because we think that the language piece of that might be a little bit of our all of us learning about the Common Core. That's where we landed on that one. We did remove a couple of items from the K and 1 report cards, just some small pieces of reading foundational skills that teachers will still be looking at, teaching into, and assessing, but not reporting on the report card. Our number one concern, hands down, every consortium member thinks our top priority is to get our assessments, our criteria, and our exemplars in place. There was little discussion as to does that work need to happen and when does it need to happen, because it was like, yes, it needs to happen, and it needs to happen now. So that work is underway, and many, many things will be in place before school starts next year. Interdisciplinary studies, the consortium decided to wait on that one again, and let's see what the next year brings. We know the next generation science standards are about to be implemented in our district, and we know that that's going to change maybe the way that we want to list and talk about science, and then we'll see what we do about those other subject areas that are kind of all clustered in that interdisciplinary studies. And then finally, conferencing came up big for teachers, and that is a development of conference styles and the purpose and use of conference and how teachers conference with parents and students. And we had several people share ideas for how we can use more student-led conferencing. And I see that not necessarily as consortium work, but work that sites do to share ideas and develop how we might do conferencing a little bit different and put students at the center of that. I had the opportunity to visit a kindergarten classroom at Baywood where it was kindergarten students in student-led conferencing, showing their parent around the room, showing their parents how to use iPads. It was the most amazing kindergarten thing I think I've ever seen in conferencing. And so lots of idea spreading, and I think just developing that. We also asked, I'm not sure we've asked yet, but I think tonight we're going to ask to change some of our conference prep dates to help us with our March conferencing next year. And I think Kristen Newland will be bringing that item to you. Any questions about the work that the consortium's done or any of the items up here? I saw all of you looking intently at some of the things that I shared, and I was just wondering if you had some questions about that work.
Well, first, I'd like to see if the public has any comments on this topic before we come back to the board. And seeing none, Mr. Unger, then Ms. Eisendrath Rogers.
Sure. A couple things. First, I actually think the four-point rubric is really important. And I'm glad you're tightening it up because it will align to the results from the California standards test that we'll be seeing. So I think anything we can do to help people understand, it's not going to be apples and apples, but it's going to sort of be the same. So I think that's real important. The second thing I'm thinking is if parents had concerns about the language, I would suggest that we talk to parents about proposed language for the report card. To make sure they're comfortable with it as well as our staff. I think that would be real important. And then the last thing, thinking about assessments, I absolutely agree that assessments are critical. A concern that I kind of hear out there is that it is sometimes difficult to get all the assessments, that the teachers find it difficult to get all the assessments done prior to the report card, especially in the primary grades, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking specifically of the BAS, that it's mm-hmm. just that I'm hearing it's difficult for the teachers to get through the BAS and still teach prior to the report card. So I would just remind people of that too.
You know, that's interesting. You should bring up the BAS of all of our assessments because we had some time at today's elementary principals meeting discussing that and discussing plans for next year. And our principals spoke very, very, I would say, in unison to me, representing their teachers, that the BAS is the most important assessment that they give to students because it's a one-on-one assessment. It's a reading behaviors, reading, writing assessment. And we talked about other ways to minimize the stress, the time, the out-of-classroomness of it. And where we landed is it's such an important assessment with our beginning early readers that sites will think creatively of how to lessen that time, the stress, but they don't want someone else to do it for them because it's a critical assessment and very much a part of what gets reported on the each trimester report card.
And that's the feedback that I got, too, is that the BAS is gives you lots and lots of really good information, but that it's really time intensive. And the concern was, I'm getting good information out of it, but by doing this, I'm not able to do this. So I just think I'm glad to hear that we're hearing that and that we're going to be addressing that.
We did a number of brainstorms with that, the idea of bringing in your level literacy intervention teacher to support that, the instructional coach potentially supporting that effort. Thing we can do to keep teachers in the classroom, but at the same time giving teachers that opportunity to have that one-on-one true assessment with that child.
Catherine?
Thank you, Darla.
I just want to make sure I understand the range of the three and the range of the four. So where we landed then at the end of the review is that the four is mastery, or is the four is exceeds mastery?
It is, the language will say excels at expectations. So right now the levels will be a level one, which is needs more time or practice. A level two would be approaching expectations. A level three would be meeting expectations. And a level four would be excelling at expectations.
Okay, that works. I understand that. And then in the interdisciplinary part of it, I understand music and PE being put together in interdisciplinary, but science and history, do we not feel like they're quantifiable, or is there a reason we're putting them all together?
I would answer that with a one, not yet. I think we have been in elementary strongly focusing on reading, writing, and mathematics. Mm-hmm. Is science and social studies being taught in our schools? Yes. Will the next generation science standards, I think, challenge us to really rethink how we teach science, and there'll be adoptions that go with it. Where I really see us going in this area, and a couple schools are starting to play with this idea, is there's only so many minutes in a day. We want our kids to leave our schools literate and strong in mathematics and great thinkers. We need to begin the process of developing what are called integrated units, where I'm studying science through literature, through writing, and through hands-on science, where I'm studying, you know, social studies by reading nonfiction texts, by writing about it, by comparing. So it's not just there's your social studies time, there's your science time. We're not there yet. But I certainly see that's where we're going. And when we get there, I think you'll see that reflection in our report card.
So it truly is interdisciplinary. So that's
yes.
Awesome. I like
that's
that. Thank
the goal.
You.
Mr. Quesemary?
My minor, mainly comments and concerns and maybe getting some things clarified. So I know that we've worked on calibrating with the teachers, and is there a follow-up kind of calibration or thoughts about that? That's one. Let's take them one at a time.
I can speak pretty confidently that our K-6 teachers are well calibrated in the area of writing. We've taken the time with them. We've done calibration activities three times a year. They've brought their student work. We've scored them together rubrically. I must give credit under the guidance of Darla and the instructional coaches. We're pretty dialed in. Our BAS training, which then, of course, needs to be calibrated as well, I think we could use a little bit of recalibration work, and I base that on being told that from teachers. So we're hoping to continue that, but I think it's going to be more of a site-based effort with the use of our instructional coaches.
And my next question is more of trying to put myself in that place of that teacher sitting there and going through the conference with the parents and trying to explain some of the language. So I'm glad you're looking at that and just thinking, have we given them some exemplars, or have we ever thought about sitting down, you know, actually filming and get a parent to agree to film someone who we think is perhaps very good at doing this and explaining the various aspects of the card?
I'll start with the first part, that the teacher that we mentioned that we got to go observe out at Baywood, she did get four parents that allowed us to observe the family conference and the student-led pieces of that, and so we will be producing some kind of a short film that'll be part of our report card website, blog, whatever we call it. You want to talk about the calibration?
I wanted to talk a little bit. I think it ties together two things that you've asked about, both the calibration and exemplars. So teachers would like a set of student exemplars at the different levels that they can use as sort of those anchor papers, both to anchor themselves, to say, I'm looking at student work now. Does it look like this student work? at a level 3, or does it look like this student work at level 4? And so teachers across the grade levels are all in the process of collecting exemplars around some of the work that we do commonly so that we can see what they look like. And that, I think, provides two things. One, that calibration. We know what it looks like when it's a 3. And two, a sample to show parents. This is what it looks like when it's proficient or when it meets the expectation at this grade level at this time of year. So we're actually going to kind of double dip on the exemplars there and use them for both of those purposes. And I guess one of the things I would tie back to that too is that last item on the parent slide was how can I help my student? Mm-hmm. And so one of the other projects that we're interested in working on are parent support documents that say, this is the standard, this is what it means, and we've got a beginning on this already, and this is what it looks like, and include those exemplars for that parent support piece, and also tied to a tool you could use at conferencing.
I especially like that last piece. And I guess the last one was as it relates to the non-English speaking parent. And making, because even though this is very good, there's still some jargon in here that may not be so easy to convey in another language.
Well, of course, everything that we've shared with parents has all been translated, but I certainly agree with you. There's a lot of teacherese in this. I would add to that, though, some of our most positive responses on the new report card, I think I've said this before, came from our ELACs, our school site ELACs and our DLACs, and I think they really appreciated the front loading of this is what we're thinking about, you know, an introduction to what our California standards now look like, this is what it's going to look like in the class, and getting their feedback. They were most positive about it, but they also were, I would say, the strongest in, and tell me what I can do to help my child succeed.
Thank you very much.
All right.
So, time to hit the balcony one last time. I want to thank Ms. Batistic and the Grading Consortium for the incredible job that they've been doing on this. It's complex, as you heard tonight. They're not doing anything in a simple fashion because we want this end product to be quality. We want it to last 17 years. We think it's going to be something that is going to really take us into the future as long as we have these current standards. With that, I hope to come back to you at one of your June meetings with a revision to the board policy regarding the elementary report card for you to review and potentially approve. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have the first reading of the novel known as The Local Control Accountability Plan.
And I want to report I've won the over-under on the 8:30 board meeting adjournment. Board, tonight we'll be providing you with an overview and some highlights of the 2015-16 Local Control Accountability Plan, the LCAP. And as you are aware, beginning in the 2014-15 school year, this year, all districts in California are required to annually develop an LCAP that combines the educational plan with the district's budget, which is nothing novel for us because way before this all started, that's been our MO. We've been aligning our strategic initiatives, our district focus with our budget. So it's actually been fairly simple for us. The requirements of the plan include several things, and I think it's the next slide on there, Mrs. Holmes. Yeah. Stakeholder engagement and consultation throughout the process with our stakeholders. 8 state priorities that must be addressed and tied to student outcomes. So those are things like guaranteeing of basic service, adherence to standards, in this case Common Core state standards, student engagement, school climate. Thirdly, district goals and actions to achieve the goals for all pupils, including identified subgroups. And then the fourth, a description of how supplemental and concentration grant funds are being used, showing that proportionality with identified subgroups. Now, remember, we are a basic aid community-funded school district, so we receive no supplemental or concentration grant funds. And yet it's important to note for the board and for the public that we are expending the total amount expected as if we were. So this LCAP plan actually has, as if we were receiving the full supplemental and concentration grant funds, making sure we're allocating ample resources to those identified subgroups. As I have said many times before, this is an update of our adopted plan that we adopted this last year. There are still the same six focus areas we had in last year's plan. Based on feedback from stakeholder groups, including secondary students, revisions have been made to tighten our focus on really five key areas, and the areas that I mentioned at the last meeting of the analogy of the blind men and the elephant. We're trying to kind of grab all those ideas we heard and say, what can we really distill that we're hearing from our stakeholders that can be incorporated into this plan, keeping our district vision and mission in the forefront? And they really are practicing what we've been learning. That's one of those key things. Secondly, increasing support for collaboration among our professionals. Third, giving sites more autonomy in their own professional learning. Fourth, continuing to expand technology opportunities for our students. And fifth, focusing our efforts on instruction and student achievement. Utilizing our instructional model, which we outlined last meeting in our teacher evaluation presentation, on supporting identified subgroups, including English learners, socioeconomically disadvantaged students, and foster youth. So tonight, Mrs. McGrath, Mrs. Frost, and Mrs. Shields will be highlighting the changes to each of our six focus areas of the LCAP for the board's review, and we will come back again in 2 weeks with a final copy based on your feedback. So I'll turn it over to Mrs. Shields.
Okay, as Mr. Robinette said, tonight the things you're going to be hearing about are going to sound very familiar. We're going to try and highlight some of the tweaks and shifts, but we're going straight on forward. So we'll begin with Focus Area 1. Where's my clicker? San Luis Coastal will achieve substantial academic gains in mathematics. The areas that we're working on are to strengthen classroom instructional strategies. We're going to continue our work in strengthening the way we teach mathematics in both our elementary and secondary classrooms next year. As a result of extensive efforts over the past 4.5 years that included multiple days of professional development, we're ready to shift the focus to, as Mr. Robinette said, practice what we've learned back in the classroom. Using the Danielson framework as our guide for describing great teaching in San Luis Coastal, the LCAP plan reflects a reduction of district-level professional development and consultant time and an increase in site-based collaboration and planning time to support teachers as they continue to develop efficacy around the new standards, curriculum, and instructional strategies. We've also begun the work of providing professional development for teachers and principals in the new ELD standards, and you heard a little bit about that from Mrs. Addis, I believe it was at the last meeting. For next year, we will include ELD strategies in all math professional development and coaching. The ELD standards demand that English be taught by all teachers throughout the day and practiced in meaningful ways in content classes, not just during ELD time. Therefore, all teachers, including our math teachers, need to be supporting English learners while providing access to rigorous subject matter. We'll be providing our teachers the tools and strategies to make this happen. Also, I'm actually still on strengthening classroom instruction, so we'll get down to the bottom one soon enough. As we, reduce that professional development and TOSA support at the district level, we want to develop our math teacher leaders at each of our elementary sites so that they will be able to continue that support with classroom teachers through planning, collaboration, and site-based professional development. In the area of providing parent education, in elementary next year, we will focus on site-based parent education activities such as family math nights to increase parent understanding of our standards and our newly adopted curriculum. We'll also provide parents with information on the Bridges curriculum and ideas for supporting their students at parent-teacher conferences. In secondary, we'll expand the intervention programs in, hang on, got my papers mixed up. And secondary, we will continue our parent math information nights at our high schools and provide at our middle schools parent information breakfasts and ELAC math meetings to inform parents regarding the CPM math curriculum and pedagogy. So a real reach out to our secondary parents next year. Next, we'll implement the Common Core Aligned Math Units. As you know, we will be enhancing these Common Core Aligned Math programs by developing technology-based activities and projects that are aligned with the new CPM 6th grade through Algebra 2 pilots and programs. The next area is to pilot and implement Common Core Math programs. Well, this you have heard about. We've adopted and will be fully implementing the K-5 Bridges curriculum, and then also the CPM high school math programs. And in the 6th through 8th grade, we'll be piloting the CPM program next year in all 6th, 7th, and 8th grade classrooms. And finally, strengthen and intervention and acceleration support. We'll provide additional interventions and personalized learning opportunities to further meet student needs with our new adoptions. And Mrs. McGrath will talk a little bit more about the specifics when we get to Focus Area 5. And in elementary, we will be learning about intervention units that are part of the K-5 Bridges program that have just become available. We're going to provide some professional development specifically for our resource teachers in the elementary. In secondary, we will identify students for entrance into specific intervention courses by better defining those courses and how they will support the needs of our struggling students in mathematics. Okay, Focus Area 2. Again, it's all about English language arts. San Luis Coastal will achieve substantial gains in English language arts and literacy. Got several areas here that we want to comment on. We are going to continue our focus in ELA to site-based efforts in elementary as we continue to expand the comprehensive literacy model. Using the Danielson framework again as our guide for teacher growth, student-centered coaching with our part-time instructional coaches at each of our sites, partnering with our principal is going to be the way we do it. Sites may include or may decide to use summer planning as well as after-school collaboration and professional development time to support specific improvement efforts in comprehensive literacy. We will bring back our new Teacher Academy next year, which took a hiatus this year, to provide support for all new and second-year elementary teachers in our comprehensive literacy model, which, as you know, is complex, involves reading and writing workshop, and takes several sessions to really get your feet wet and get a good understanding of that. We will provide a 0.5 elementary ELA TOSA to support the site efforts, facilitate district pilots next year because reading will be coming up for adoption, and then coordinate the reading materials process for that adoption. That's elementary. In secondary, we will strengthen our secondary, classroom instructional strategies through, we'll be adding a 1.0 ELA secondary TOSA to address those same common core expectations in English language arts and provide needed professional development, facilitate again a materials adoption process, as well as unit development in our secondary classrooms. Again, the Danielson framework will be key in defining strong teaching and learning, collaboration, model lessons, co-teaching and observation activities will be how we support our teachers in getting there. In addition, we will continue our work in secondary with our ELA consultant to develop integrated units aligned to the Common Core expectations. So moving on, strengthen our interventions and accelerations. Early intervention, as you know, has always been a cornerstone and has in most recent years been part of our LEA addendum and now our LCAP plan. As we begin to decrease staffing in our one-to-one reading intervention, reading recovery, we will increase shifting staffing in the leveled literacy intervention. We believe that we can more efficiently and economically meet the needs of our youngest at-risk readers through this shift in practice. Well, just as a side note, tell you this was something else that we talked about extensively today at our elementary principals meeting, and our elementary principals requested vigorously that we provide the same kind of coordination and facilitation of making sure that these teachers get the kind of training that they would get had they been a reading recovery teacher for our expanded LLI teacher. And that will take place under the direction of Mary Zerm, as well as kind of leading towards our intervention TOSA, Don Addis, to support that effort with this group as well. In secondary, we'll expand intervention programs in reading, such as Read 180, and purchase specialized reading curriculum for our special day classrooms. And finally, we see enhanced K-12 ELD instruction, support, and services to align with best practices. This is the ELD professional development that I mentioned earlier. We'll be providing that for all teachers, instructional coaches, EL aides, and administrators in not only the new standards and the framework, but that focus on both designated and integrated ELD. This professional development will take place in August before school begins, and then embedded and continued at school sites. And when I say embedded, I mean in the math in service and in science in services. So we're really working not only with our English teachers or with our elementary teachers, but with our content teachers to understand how they can keep that rigor going in their classrooms, but provide strategies to increase students' understanding of the language.
So I'd like to discuss focus area 3 with you, which is about STEAM and CTE. So we have four main areas here. The first one is to continue our transition to next generation science standards. And part of that I want to kind of bring up that, you know, based on the input that we've received, we're going to be waiting on a full implementation with elementary when it comes to next generation science standards, but also honoring those teachers that have been really curious and are wanting to continue to move forward with that information. But a little different at secondary in that we need to continue to move forward with our middle school and high school teachers that are science teachers. So we'll continue that transition to next generation science standards, continue with our A to G ninth grade integrated science course that we're proposing right now to UC, and then begin with our aligned next gen science standards lessons and start working toward unit development with the secondary teachers. When it comes to developing and articulating a model STEAM program, as you well know, Los Osos Middle School has done an excellent job of getting started with a really strong STEAM program, and Morro Bay High School really has next year to kind of finish looking at what that will look like for Morro Bay High School students and then begin to articulate that program. So after we work on that articulation on the coast, we need to begin to better strengthen what's happening in the city. So that will be our focus for this coming year, with a real focus on problem-based and project-based learning. We've started that training this year, and teachers have really responded well to that, so we'll continue that. When you look at our arts programs, we started year one of a support of that last year, and so we'll move on to year two of supporting that. And then last, with our CTE pathways, we heard a lot of celebration tonight about some real successful CTE pathways. So one thing that we would like to move there is, if you remember, the Common Core had literacy standards for CTE, right? And so we've done some good training around that, and teachers are starting to understand how literacy is taught within career tech as well. So we're going to move more into pathway development and what's called programs of study, where we look at if a student is interested in this topic of career education, then what are all of the courses, not just the pathway of elective courses, but what are all of the courses that we would recommend they take so they have a complete program. So we'll begin to work on developing those programs of study. And then at the next board meeting, I will tell you more about dual enrollment and some agreements that we're starting to come to with Cuesta that could be fantastic for our students. So next area is focus area 4.
Focus area 4 for San Luis Coastal, we will create an intentional culture of care, intervention, and support for our students. We have six broad goals in this focus area. The first one is to refine and enhance our counseling model. At our last board meeting, Chris Dowler, along with two counselors and one of our middle school assistant principals, presented information regarding our counseling and support services on our sites. In this action item, we plan to continue the MFT counseling at many of our campuses, 504 support on all of our campuses, and the PEI counseling model that we have at our middle schools and at Pacific Beach High School. Number two is to strengthen special education opportunities. In this action item, you'll see professional development for our special education department to include inclusion and advanced ABA strategies for the classroom, an emphasis on mainstreaming opportunities for our students, and a coordinator for student support services. Regarding the last, we're finding that increased advocacy, litigation, challenging IEPs, in addition to program monitoring and development, can't be accomplished effectively with our current structure. Number three is to provide support for our EL, SED, foster, and homeless youth. We want to continue to provide our breakfast program to all of our sites and provide transportation for students participating in interventions and activities at sites with the greatest need. Latino family literacy will be provided at every Title I elementary school and at all of our secondary schools. Number four is early connection and identification before kindergarten. In previous board meeting, longitudinal data regarding our success for all preschool, as well as information regarding our early intervention preschool, was provided to the board. Both programs will continue, including parent education, support of certificated and classified staff, as well as materials and supplies to support the program. Number five is to create a district-wide multi-tiered system of support. To support our English learners, our focus this year is to better define our ELD program at all sites. This will include professional development, model teaching and coaching, much of what you heard from Don Addis at a previous board meeting. We'll also continue our summer school program, ESY, and as a result of feedback during our student interviews, training for our AVID teachers. And then finally, number six, ensuring safe and nurturing campuses. Student Support Services plans to support PBIS again, so that's positive behavioral intervention support at select elementary schools. Restorative approaches programs will be adopted at each middle school, focusing on the implementation of in-class behavior supports and promoting a positive school climate. In addition, mental health and behavior support training will be provided to our school counseling staffs.
Focus Area 5 is exciting, expanding our technology and really promoting innovation. So our first objective was to create visionary leadership teams, and this is started last year. The model classrooms that we've started this year have been had a great impact and really created a lot of energy and excitement at our sites. And so we're looking at creating a second round of model classrooms, and teachers have applied for that, and we're on the way to getting that ready and teachers set up for next year. So we want to continue that energy so that they can really serve as a model to their site of how technology can be used to truly impact instruction. Also, we are looking to kind of create site leadership. So as you've heard a few times now, the idea being having more site autonomy. So this is a way, as we have ed tech lead teachers at each site, gives them an opportunity to help support and to be a professional development opportunity right there at the site so that teachers can begin to utilize innovative practices and technology in that way. Next, to modernize and improve classroom instructional strategies, as I mentioned, the ed tech lead teachers are going to be a great focus of that, as well as library techs have also been a big help when it comes to that. Remember how we talked about that SAMR model, right? Taking a lesson and kind of moving it up the level of complexity. So that's what we'll really focus on next year. Another innovative practice, as you know, is our 90-10 dual immersion at Pacheco, and working on that for next year. Fostering community partnerships. Proud to talk about that Pathway Trust grant that we have with Cuesta Community College, as well as our Tech Innovation Advisory Committee, allows us to really have a group of dedicated stakeholders to help us move innovation forward in the district. And finally, to research and implement personalized learning opportunities. To me, this is one of the most exciting ways that we can utilize technology. When technology can be used to truly diagnose and to personalize student needs, to me, one of the hardest things for a teacher is that differentiation piece. So when technology can be used to help them meet this need, I feel like we're really doing a great thing with technology. So that's our last goal there. I'll move on to focus area 6. Looking at using data. So we have our first one of improving instructional practices based on data. So we are going to have a focus on the instructional model and solid instruction in the classroom with the Danielson framework. So we're going to transition to Teach Boost and also shift some elementary scoring to sites. We have our full implementation of elementary standards-based report card, as you just heard about. Strengthen our district and site use of data cycle. You know, we're kind of in this strange place with data right now, where we're really kind of waiting on the state in some ways to give us more information about targets and what expectations are and how we're going to see data and that sort of thing. So in the meantime, we're really strengthening our use of our internal data while we're waiting on the state to give us more information. And we've set some clear targets about growth that we want to see when it comes to that. So we have some additional admin training and some ways to kind of develop our use of SBAC interim assessments and the pieces of data that we do have. The last one being strengthen the use of online programs. So two examples I'll give you there is Illuminate. If you remember us talking about Illuminate's the learning management system that we use to house our data. And it's been a huge help at the district level and at a principal level. And our goal is to really get it down to impacting a classroom level so that teachers can get immediate feedback with data and be able to do something so that it impacts instruction. That's our focus for Illuminate for next year. And Naviance is another example. You'll remember that one is the high school counselor focus that will really help kind of create a team with a student, teacher, counselor, and parent so that they can see a student's progress toward college and career readiness. So to kind of wrap up some of the general pieces here at the end, you know, we gathered a lot of feedback and input from a variety of stakeholders. And this plan really reflects a focus on doing what's best for kids and best practices. We've had to make some strategic shifts as we have some evolving needs, but we've done so without increasing the budget. Everything is focused around student achievement and doing what's best for our students. So while the state figures out baseline data and expected achievement, we'll continue to have our focus on our internal benchmark assessments and continued growth in those ways and start to look at SBAC-aligned common assessments. So as you can see, we have our same six focus areas, and we'll continue that focus, shifting resources, but still without increasing our budget. Are there any questions for any of the six areas?
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak on this topic? Seeing none, we'll come back to the board. Any questions, comments? Okay. Mr. Unger.
Well, I actually sent a bunch of questions and just kind of comments to Mr. Robinette, and I know he started to respond to them. I'm not going to go through all of those because there were just too many of them. Just a couple of things. I think I really like the college readiness goal. I think I appreciate that. I'm glad we're doing music program upgrades. I think that's just wonderful to read that. And then to see, that, for example, that Mr. Bellier is ordering some new musical instruments, and we'll be talking about that later. I'm really glad we're focusing on early childhood. You know, as we keep hearing more and more about how important early childhood experiences are, I think that that's something that our district needs to continue to invest in. I'm glad we got back to doing summer school and that we got the AVID stuff going too. I think that's really important. And I appreciate the Latino literacy increase. I think that's going to really be key for our Spanish-speaking parents. A big shout-out to you guys for the Career Pathways grant with Cuesta. That's phenomenal. And then increased technology for the psychs and the SLPs is going to be really helpful too. So those are just some of the things that I saw about this. I also do appreciate that we're going to be looking at Laguna Middle School. As you know, we're being really successful at Los Osos Middle School, but we need to look at what's going on in the city and try to, I don't know if we can replicate what's going on the coast, but maybe have that help them find their way to the fine things that we're doing out in the coast. So I think we're doing some good stuff, and I look forward to hearing back from Mr. Robinette on some of the other questions I have.
Great, thank you.
Anyone else?
All right. I had a question for Mrs. Frost. And I'm not sure where I was when I read this.
Okay.
This was a... My eyes were just spinning in my head. This was a long document and a lot of work, so I thank everybody for the obvious amount of work that went into doing this. What I read had to do with the amount of time that we hope, I guess, to have special education students
in
mainstream
classrooms. Yes.
And that, if I remember correctly, we had fallen a little bit short of our initial goals there, and I wondered if you could speak to that and what we might be contemplating.
This is actually something that we're just beginning to look at as a department, and I actually made a presentation to principals today, and we'll be working with some special education staff on Thursday. California Department of Education looks at a number of indicators in a special education department, and one of the things that they're really looking at very closely these days is outside regular classroom and inside regular classroom. So looking at your special education child and the percentage of time that child is with his or her non-disabled peers. And the state sets percentages that we should be striving to meet. And right now, San Luis Coastal, and we're not off the mark with other districts in the state of California. Other districts do struggle to meet this mark, but we don't meet the percentage of general education that is set by the state for many of our students. Not all of our students, but many of our students. So what we're charged with as a district is looking at the program for each child and how we might change a service delivery model, how we might account differently the way that our children are in general education. So there are certain ways that a percentage of general education is documented on an IEP. One of the simplest ways that we can affect that number is to make sure that we're accurately recording the general education that our children are able to participate in. The bigger piece, though, is really looking at our programming. Are there other opportunities for general education for our special education students? And this is not something we do overnight. We are looking at this deeply as a department, and we will be working with our campuses, working with our special education teachers, working with our administrators. We will go out and we will look at best practice programs and make sure that the things that we implement here are in the best interest of our students.
So if a student, for example, that is has a placement in an SDC class, mm-hmm. would the expectation be that the child would be removed from that class and spend time in a gen ed classroom for a certain amount of the day?
The state actually dictates the percentage of our special education children who can be in special education for a specified amount of time, and really what they'd like to see is that no more than 9% of our special education children are in more than 80% special education. We do, with our special day children, we do mainstream those kids. Sometimes they're in general education classrooms, but sometimes it's the lunch period. Sometimes it's the passing period. Sometimes it's an aide pushing into a gen ed classroom with this child. All of those things count as general education for an SDC child. So yes, you can have a child who qualifies for SDC who is not in SDC 100% of the day.
And would that also apply to, I think there's new terminology, but it used to be called moderate to severe students?
Even some of our moderate to severe students have general education opportunities. Again, the lunch is the easiest way that we can provide that. Passing periods for our secondaries, another very easy way that we can provide that. But we can also push them into an elective, a general education elective. We can also push them in with support to a general education physical education class. Even if our adaptive PE teacher is working with them in that general education class, that's a general education experience for them with typical peers.
It's an exposure, an experience for exposure.
It is. And so that's what we have to analyze, the opportunities that we're able to provide for our students.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that to me.
Anything else? All right. Thank you very much for helping to clarify this complicated document. All right. 9.08 is proposed revisions to Board Policy 3100 regarding the budget.
Kim, if you can pull it up. I guess it's probably a good idea for our board policy on budget to reflect the LCAP and the changes that have happened. So that's why I'm here tonight, is to do that. So we have the latest kind of recommendations from CSBA. So the School Boards Association puts out kind of what it should be, looking at the old policy, looking at the new. And so if I can just kind of go through those changes, potential changes for the board to talk about and kind of discuss them. So. The first one, basically, the first paragraph just talks about including, as we look at our district vision goals, priorities, that we include the language concerning the local control accountability plan as well as other comprehensive plans. And that basic, the last sentence kind of, the budget guides us throughout the year as we can continue to come back to the board first interim, second interim, speaking about the budget. It definitely guides kind of our conversation as where we head. Now, you'll notice on the next part, budget development and adoption process, the LCAP and the new education code dictates kind of how that goes now, that we have our LCAP first reading, which will be next board meeting, and then we have LCAP approval, and those things have to happen prior to the budget being adopted. So that's all laid out in education code now, which is reflected. So that's why that first paragraph is lined out. And if you'll see right below that, it says the board shall hold a public hearing on the proposed budget in accordance with Education Code 42103, 42127, which is the new LCAP language. And then it proceeds to, at the next part, kind of describe what that is. So prior to July 1st, we have to have our public hearings. We have to approve the LCAP adoption. And so it just kind of talks about that in terms of the format. Instead of saying in the format prescribed, it actually lays it out in terms of the state standard account code structure at the bottom of that page. The second page, again, the budget process of when the district is supposed to have those things done. So we're supposed to, 5 days after the board adopts our budget, we're supposed to give that to the county superintendent of schools with supporting data. If for some reason they deny our budget or don't accept it, then it talks about kind of the next step, that the board would have to respond to that by September 8th. In terms of budget criteria and standards, as you go through, again, it just kind of more specifically outlines them as based now on the new LCAP and standards. So they should meet state criteria and standards. Again, ADA enrollment, ratio of ADA to enrollment, local control funding formula revenue, talks about unrestricted general fund balances.
Mr. Pinkerton?
Yes, go ahead.
I read under budget criteria and standards.
Yeah.
It's a very long paragraph, and then the second paragraph down. I read and reread that over and over, and I don't understand what that means.
I mean, in terms of developing our budget, when we develop our budget, we have to look at all of those things. And for most districts that are ADA-based, LCFF, local control funding formula, supplemental, I mean, you would have to go through and kind of measure those and how much money are we going to get per student, what are our supplemental grants, what's our concentration fund, those things. It's a little different for us as a basic aid school district. What's that?
I think
the one that begins the district budget.
I think Marilyn, can I
yes.
just
yes.
do you want to explain it, Chris?
Yeah, I think I can. And get me stop
talk
me
about
if
that
I'm wrong.
Paragraph.
But I think what it talks about is in districts that get concentration grants because
okay.
they get extra money for the targeted students. I think this is the expectation that money will actually be spent
mm-hmm.
proportionally on those students
yes.
rather than other students in the district. I think that's what this is referring
okay.
to. Is that
yeah, well, I was explaining the top one. So the second one, yes,
as though
exactly,
we...
right? So our unduplicated students, so that those would be the students that we would receive supplemental funds for in our district. Unduplicated meaning if I'm an English learner and I'm low income, I'm still just one student.
Right.
I only get one supplemental amount. Now, part of the LCAP is we are supposed to take those supplemental funds that we receive and spend them on increased services for those students.
Okay.
So not to do anything else, not to buy new buses, not to go do other things, but those supplemental dollars are supposed to be for those unduplicated students. So that's what the LCAP plan kind of outlines and talks about. And in terms of that, there are set amounts. So as school districts are reaching their LCFF targeted amount, currently they're not there yet. They're a little bit lower, and each year they get a little bit higher towards that target as money comes in and as districts go. Again, as Mr. Robin had said, we're already above the target area, and we're already putting all of the amount of money that we would get in supplemental funds towards our LCAP and our students. But other districts, as that's increasing, they're supposed to be increasing the services for their unduplicated count at the same amount. So if the supplemental funds go up 10% in a year, the district should be spending that 10% towards unduplicated students. So it should meet those students' needs and be focused on them. So that's it's a little different in terms of, and that's the increasing or improving services for students part in that first paragraph. So as the supplemental money comes in, it's supposed to provide increasing and improving services for the unduplicated students.
Okay, thank you.
Now, I went ahead and left the next line in, even though it wasn't necessarily something that CSBA had. And as I went through the old board policy, I just felt it was important for us to leave that there, right? Because I believe that was a pretty much a board philosophy and something that we tie into in San Luis Coastal. So hopefully that's okay. And then the next one, you know, again, the budget was the same part. And then fund balance really kind of breaks down the different aspects of the fund balance in what you can or can't spend and how you can spend it. So, of course, we have non-spendable fund balance. We have things that are like money that's tied up in inventories or food products or things like that. You can't pull that money out and spend it in some other way. We have restricted balances. So they can only be spent, Title I, federal money, special education funds, those types of things on those. The board sometimes commits funds. So currently in our undesignated reserve, we have money that's set aside for textbooks. That would be an example of committed funds. And then, again, the board can also assign fund balances. So the board can have specific purposes or things that they want to do in the future and put money towards those. And then at the end of the day, there may be some unassigned funds, some money that falls to the bottom line that the board hasn't necessarily put forth in terms of a specific item. So those would be unassigned funds. And then ultimately, you know, the board intends to maintain, of course, a minimum assigned and unassigned fund balance that you feel is necessary to keep us fiscally solvent. So that's kind of that, having our reserves in line to meet the needs of the district. The next page is basically if for some reason it falls below that, the board, of course, can take actions to, you know, change that and make sure that we stay where we need to be, specifically, you know, over the state minimum for the district. We've set a 10% reserve level. And then I thought the next line, which is highlighted, was another good line that the board had in the former board policy that I feel like we should leave in, and that basically, you know, the board has authority to review and amend this resolution as needed to reflect changes in circumstances and district needs. And so those are kind of the key components. Again, it brings us in line now with kind of the LCAP and the changes in education code surrounding, you know, the public hearings and getting public input and all those types of things through that LCAP process.
Hi, Ms. First, let's see if anyone from the public is here to talk about this. No, Mr. Quesenberry, then Mr. Unger.
I'm sorry, I just failed to turn my light off from my previous comment.
Mr. Unger?
I appreciated the emphasis on transparency and solvency in the proposed board policy. And the other thing that I'm really happy about is that we're focusing on our post-retirement benefits and protecting our employees, as well as our reserve balances as well. So thank you.
Any other comments? So this is a first reading. If the board feels prepared to take action tonight, we can do that. Or if folks would rather have an opportunity to ponder this a little longer, we can do this at the next meeting. What's your pleasure? Okay, then someone want to make a motion?
I think it's cumbersome, but I think that's the nature of what's being discussed in it. I had spoken to Mr. Pinkerton about on page 4 the paragraph that reads, when the superintendent or designee presents a report to the board on the estimated accrued but unfunded cost of OPEBs, which we used to call GASB, the board shall disclose as a separate agenda item at the same meeting whether or not it will reserve a sufficient amount of money in its budget to fund the present value of the benefits of existing retirees and or the future cost of employees who are eligible for benefits in the current fiscal year. Do we do, and Mr. Pinkerton, you told me that we do that.
Yeah, I mean, I know we do our actuarial every 2 years. Julie, do you know, do we... Yeah, but is it an annual report, or is it every other year, correct? And so I'm
sorry, what did Mrs. Lang say?
So normally the actuarial that we do is every other year. So where they come in, we have basically the auditor comes in and does the actuarial study of our GADSB, what that's supposed to be.
To fund the present value of the benefits.
So I'm wondering if this is, that's normally
for the current
legal
fiscal year.
That.
So that can just be an addendum to the budget in any given year that states that we have the money to pay the post-retirement benefits
or not.
For anyone who is deserving of them or expecting them in that
Yeah,
year.
Or not, or where we're at with that process and whether we're putting money forward or those types of things. So,
Okay.
I think what I'm reading is that we should do that annually.
I think we should.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a big deal to do it. It's
not necessarily do the full actuarial study aspect,
no, but just some sort of a certification
as part of the
or
budget,
from ourselves
as part of the budget
that
process,
says,
"Yeah,
we
have,
we have it,
around.
And we plan to do it."
Agreed. Yeah.
After the first interim. Okay. So that
we will do that.
I have no problem with going ahead and approving this tonight. Then,
someone would.
I'll move approval of the revisions to board policy 3100.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So we have 5 in favor and 2 absences.
Thank you.
Item 9.09, proposed revisions to board policy 5131.2 with regard to students and bullying.
Thank you. This is a second reading. I attempted to incorporate the, which were actually somewhat simple, changes I heard from the last board meeting. Again, this is a bullying policy that was adopted in 2012, revised in 2013. This is another revision basically to try to make the complaint and investigation processes as straightforward and direct as possible. The changes that are in front of you tonight are on page B. Mrs. Holmes has it right there, and there really are three things that I heard from the last meeting. The first was to say that site level, that's not the correct version. That's not, that shouldn't be, that isn't what it was on the, what's up there isn't the correct version.
Oh, you have the non-discrimination one up.
I think we have the correct version in the
Board
on
packet.
Board docs.
I hope so, because that's,
yeah,
that's not the right,
yeah,
one. Up
we've
there.
Got it.
Yeah, it should be in the the new one. There it is. That's it. So the first thing is to have the site-level grievance procedures specified in a new AR on bullying, as opposed to something that refers to sexual harassment. You know, we initially had the sexual harassment one because it was the most direct, confidential, expedient way to investigate things. So we will be writing a AR on bullying that has some of those same components, but it'll be specific to bullying. So that's the first thing we did. The second, because it was something that I think was important to the board and to Mr. Buckman in particular, was to make sure that we still had specified in there that if someone wished to do a uniform complaint on any aspect of bullying, they could. So you'll see additionally a uniform complaint may be filed as specified in our uniform complaint AR. The third change, I think, which is what Mr. Millar had brought up, was to make it even more expedient. So you'll see on that that last paragraph, it now reads, as soon as possible, no later than one business day, the staff member shall notify the principal of a report of having witnessed bullying, so that it would be at no later than one business day. I think those were the three things that seemed to be generic board concerns for this policy. But this is the second reading, and I'm available for questions.
Anyone from the public here to talk to this? Yes. We have.
The Rose Fowler, elementary school counselor. The one business day sometimes is a problem at the elementary level. Sometimes the student doesn't come back the next day, so it's difficult to do the investigation. Sometimes personnel isn't available for that. Sometimes it takes a couple of days to sort it all out, what's happening, and there can be multiple pieces to it. Frequently it turns out to not be bullying specifically. It can end up being conflict. Kids use the term bullying rather loosely when actually it's a conflict. I was doing a bullying investigation today with a student that had come from the parent saying it's happening all the time. And when I actually got an opportunity to talk to the student, it was somebody threw a seed from the tree at him back in September. So sometimes the one-day investigation isn't quite enough to unravel what's actually happening. Is that confusing to you?
Go ahead.
It's not confusing to me, but I think that the one day that we were referring to was that when a staff member or anyone is made aware of someone comes to the custodian and says, so-and-so is bullying me, the custodian then would have one working day in which to report that to the principal or whoever is the appropriate party.
Okay,
yes,
am I getting it right?
Investigation.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah.
Just to report it.
Correct.
Yeah. To have it investigated.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's precisely it. And our AR that we were actually referring to and will be writing specifies the amount of time in the investigation, and there actually is a window for investigation which we are expecting to be faster than the one that was in here, but reasonable. But this is really about reporting, so that a principal is going to be made known. You know, they're going to know something happened, so that they can at least set in motion what needs to take place.
Okay. Any further discussion? Oh, Mr. Unger.
Yeah. I was just curious about the last sentence on page B, where we talk about the one business day, the report to the principal. And my only concern is, what if the principal's off? Is it a problem if the principal's off campus that day? Do we need to just add, we took out district compliance officer. Do we need to add principal or designee maybe in there? I mean, is that something that's going to be helpful, or is that something that would be addressed in the ARs?
Yeah, we can add it. Certainly possible. Certainly, it's fine. It's very reasonable.
Anything else? So with the addition, Marilyn, did you have something?
I was going to move
with the addition of that clarification, observate, report his or her observation to the principal or designee. Are we ready to have a motion?
I do have one comment.
Yes, Marilyn.
I was going to make a motion, but I have one comment. Because this also includes cyberbullying that may occur off campus. Can we be sure that students are made aware in their orientation, their packet, or however, if they're not aware that things that they do off campus from their own bedroom at home, you know, could potentially be suspendable or expellable offenses, can we make sure that that's made clear to them?
Certainly. Yeah.
Okay. That doesn't go in this board policy, but it's just resulting from the board policy we need to inform. Okay. So that said, if no one else has comments, I'll move approval of board policy 5131 as amended this evening.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Right. Motion carries 5-0 with two absences. 9.10, proposed revisions to board policy 5145.3, students non-discrimination harassment.
This is also a second reading of an almost complete rewrite of the old policy. The only area that the board had suggestions for revision, which I incorporated, is found on page A. If you just scroll down a little bit more, Mrs. Holmes, there. Right in that second to the last paragraph in the bottom, or the second one up, I added a statement that says, additionally, the superintendent or designee shall develop means for students to report threats or incidents confidentially and anonymously. That was brought up at the last meeting, that the policy seemed to read fine, but add something that says that somebody can report confidentially or anonymously. And we'll also be working to incorporate a, you know, kind of a we tip section on our website, on our school website, so that it makes it very easy for any situation, but also for an area of non-discrimination or harassment, that it can be reported anonymously. So that's the only addition that I took from the last meeting that is now incorporated into there.
Okay. Anyone from the public wishing to speak? Seeing no one, this is a second reading. Is there any board discussion on this? And if not, we're ready for a motion.
I'll move adoption of board policy 5145.3.
And I'll second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0 with two absences. Then we have 9.11, approval to pay board member's salary for permissible absence.
Yes, Mr. Unger was participating on the Education Coalition in Sacramento and was unable to attend on the April 14th expulsion hearing night. And he is seeking your consideration for excusing his absence for that evening.
Anyone from the public? No? Any board discussion? Mrs. Roger?
I'll move approval of item 9.11.
A second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any abstentions? Mr. Unger? Carries, yes, 4-0, two absences, one abstention. Mrs. Holm will figure all that out. Okay, now we're moving on to the action consent agenda. I'm going to read the items on it. Please indicate if you would like any item pulled for discussion. 10.01, approval of okay. 10.02, approve revisions to 2015-2016 instructional calendar. 10.03, acceptance of donations. 10.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.05, approval of purchase orders. 10.06, approval of warrants and payroll. 10.07, approval of California high school exit exam waivers for students with disabilities. Okay, I would appreciate a motion on 10.02, 10.03, 10.04, 10.05, and 10.07.
I'll move approval of items 10.2 through 10.6.
I pulled 6.
Oh, I'm sorry.
10.2 through
10.5.
And 10.7, please.
10.7.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second it.
Anyone from the public wishing to discuss our action consent agenda? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. Mr. Unger.
I pulled 10.01 simply because I wanted to acknowledge the retirement of Bob Goossens, who's been a longtime custodian for the district. I first met Bob when my wife was working at C.L. Smith. He's just a great guy. Always out there for the kids. I was a speech pathologist at the school at the time, and he would take some of our severely handicapped kids and kind of shepherd them during lunch and make sure that they were doing some good work with him. Just a great guy. He loves to fish, and I'm sure he's going to be going off and fishing. He ended his career as a custodian at Los Osos Middle School, and I will just tell you that I think the district is going to miss the heck out of him. So, Bob will miss you, and on that note, I would move approval of item 10.01.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. 10.06. Marilyn.
Okay. On the 10.06, the item I pulled is warrants and payroll. And if you look at page 14, I was kind of shocked to see a payment to CISC 3, which is our insurance carrier, of $1,036,483. And I called Mr. Pinkerton, because that's such a high figure, I thought, is that a quarterly payment? And that is not a quarterly payment. That's a monthly payment for our benefits. Now, and it's comprised, from what Mr. Pinkerton explained to me, of the 25% that the employees pay and the 75% that the district pays. So in 1 month, we are paying over $1 million. That's over $12 million a year. So we've been made aware, you know, that our cost of benefits is going up and will continue to rise, but that figure really brought home for me what it means in terms of dollars when you see $1 million a month check go out. So I thought if other people hadn't happened to catch that particular one, I wanted to draw attention to that, you know, that cost, that benefit cost. And with that, I'll move approval of 10.06.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'll second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Any advance agenda items? Mr. Unger.
Well, I was thinking about Mrs. Smith's request, or Ms. Smith's request to name the student leadership team room at Laguna Middle School after Mr. Geiselbeck.
Geiselbrecht.
I believe we've had something like this come up before regarding, I think, the gym at Laguna Middle School. And my recollection is that we typically haven't done this. We have had some people, we have had, I think there may be folks that we would want to recognize, and I wonder if the board would be interested in a discussion setting standards for whether and how we would want to, if we want to engage in some kind of naming of facilities for folks.
Huh. Well, as long as my light's on, I'm totally interested in that discussion. At one point, I had inquired about how that worked, and I just was told that we didn't name any facilities after living people. But
if the board has an interest in doing something like that, I mean, I'm not particularly interested, but if it's something that to explore, I would not want to limit it to facilities. Perhaps there is another way we can honor people without naming rooms and buildings and spaces, but I wouldn't support naming facilities.
Well, there is a precedent, and it's not necessarily a precedent for naming facilities. There is a plaque placed on what is now the weight room, but used to be the wrestling room, to Sam Boyd, a former teacher and wrestling coach and football coach. So that it wasn't actually naming a facility for him, but it was a recognition of his efforts. So that was quite a long time ago, but I just wanted to make sure that people are aware that there may be other means of doing this, and I don't know whether we want to get into that or not.
You know, there's a bench at C.L. Smith, I think, in memory of Patty Rose. So it is possible to do some kind of a sort of a lasting memorial, if not naming a facility, then possibly placing a bench with a plaque or whatever.
Dr. Prager?
You know, I was partaking in a conversation with some of the architects. They're discussing, as you know, there's been site committee work at Slo High and Morro Bay High, and some of the discussions were centered around both sites being interested in some kind of wall of fame, some kind of endearing recognition center area as part of the Measure D development. So it's part of a design, even, where you capture a hall or a quad or a ceremonial wall where you can honor people that have given so much of their lives or their circumstances to the school district and the children. In conversation with KBZ out at the Morro Bay parking lot, he was describing this design that I thought was fantastic, and it could capture much of what Mr. Unger's talking about. Circumstances, it wouldn't necessarily just have to be unique to the two comprehensive high schools. We could incorporate something like that at each of our sites so that future boards, this current board, would have a place, a logical place to honor people. But that's just something to think about. Certainly it's at the board's will.
Mrs. Holmes?
As an alumni of one of our schools, I love that idea. People who come so emotionally to us, who want to choose a space. The gym was the preference for Mr. Boyd, who was a coach while I was at school there, and we have had another employee whose family wanted the gym at Laguna named in his honor. They react very emotionally, and they want the space that they identify with that person's contribution to the school chosen. But I think a centralized place where you'd have lots of walls would get so much more attention than only the people who happen to frequent that particular part of the campus, and it would really be much more impactful.
one thing, if that sounds great to me, I'd like to see us be able to recognize folks. I think something that would have to be considered, and I don't know how we would do this, is how do you choose who you honor? And I think that, so the two questions for me are, how do you do it, and how do you choose how you do it?
So
how and where do you do it? So that would be...
A criteria would have to be developed.
Yeah.
So...
Just because somebody says, I love my first grade teacher, I'd like to see her honored, that's different than somebody who has really gone above and beyond. And then what does above and beyond mean?
Right.
That could be a very interesting summer discussion topic at a retreat and a potential subcommittee that we could... Because other districts have wrestled with the same thing. We could probably find a model that has developed those criteria and really thought through it, and we could check it out. I'd be willing to dabble in that for a while if you'd like.
That would be fine.
Okay.
Anything else for advanced agenda? Okay. Board reports. Mr. Quisenberry?
I beat Mr. Unger to my button here, so I'll make this quick. I had a chance to be over at Morro Bay High School today. The Rotary of Morro Bay was featuring the students that had gone to the RILA conference, which is Rotary Youth Leadership
Awards, actually.
Awards, okay. So they sent 10 students, or I should say we sent 10 students. That was the combination of the Rotary of Morro Bay, Cayucas, and Los Osos. Morro Bay sent 6, Los Osos sent 2, Cayucas sent 2 of their students who are attending Morro Bay High School. Anyway, I wanted to tell you that these students came back. They were very positive about their experience. They felt empowered to take a role as leaders, not only in their school, but in their future. I wanted to commend Nick Mendoza, who's been a longtime Morro Bay supporter. Both his sons graduated from Morro Bay High School, and he was a big booster in those days of the school. Also, Linda Todd, who is here tonight with her FFA students. They did the barbecuing and providing the food, and were all decked out in their blue jackets and uniforms. And it was really a wonderful experience. And again, like the young people we saw here today, it was just so encouraging about what goes on in our schools and what these students will bring to us in the future.
Mr. Unger?
Thanks. Just a couple of sad things. I'd like to report that I did go to the memorial service for Lanny Colston on Sunday. It was held at Monarch Grove, where he was a longtime teacher. I believe he taught there from the day that the school opened, I think in 1993, 94, something like that. It was well attended. There were, I'd say, well over 100 people there. Found out some great things about Lanny. I didn't know he's a tremendous fisherman, just a real strong, powerful influence at Monarch Grove and on the students at Monarch Grove. His wife was a teacher for our district, I think she ended her career at Del Mar. Lanny had been ill for quite a long time. And up until the end, I guess, he really just displayed a tremendous amount of courage and just a tremendous just commitment and sense of humor, and loved his family. So I would be remiss if I didn't say something about Lanny and just the great influence he was. And then the other thing is, last week we lost Larry Peterson. Larry was served on the County Board of Education as our board member. He was responsible for San Luis Coastal. Longtime board member, a 30-year board member. I think he was on the board went on the board in 1985. I remember 1989 when I was hired by the county office, going in front of the board, quaking in my heels, and there was Mr. Peterson, and, you know, making me feel quite right at home. Larry was also principal for San Luis Coastal. I think he taught in San Luis Coastal. I believe he was principal at Los Ranchos Elementary School. And I think he was a principal out on the coast, too, but I'm not sure.
I think Del Mar. I think he was there also.
Yeah. Larry, apparently, I talked to Jim Brescia today, and he said Larry was actually at the last county board meeting, just fully engaged in what he was doing. And a week before he died, things started to go downhill, and he died quickly and peacefully, which is, I think, maybe something we would all like to have happen. So I'd just like to acknowledge the life of Larry Peterson as well.
Thank you. Catherine?
I would be remiss after Mr. Quisenberry's eloquent words about the Morro Bay students who were sponsored by Rotary if I didn't mention Daybreak and Tolosa here in SLO, who sponsored the students who went from SLO High School. Unfortunately, I don't know the names of all the people, the members, but except Brian Idler, who my son was had the opportunity to go and came back and was driven by Brian Idler. And they do indeed come back full of ideas and enthusiasm and a renewed sense of wanting to be a participant in the school and the leadership and in the community. So that's a tremendous opportunity that we provide our students.
Thank you. And I have, Kim,
that just happened to come with the little note that I gave you.
Okay.
Although those were intended for the Iron Chef team,
the
chefs.
I will return these.
And to you. I'm not sure that the rest of my teammates really are available to go. I haven't talked with them yet, so they may be available for some of you if you'd like.
I
have a package for the Grill Masters as well.
Okay. These are tickets to High Tea with San Luis Obispo Boutiques on May 9th at the Masonic Temple at 3 p.m. And it's put on by San Luis Obispo's High School's FHA Heroes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to return these to Mrs. Holmes, and if anyone is interested,
I'll email you to see what tickets might be available. I'm not able to take advantage of it. I won't be around this weekend, but
okay.
I don't know if Mandy or Val would be interested either.
And I know this is still a couple of months away, but it would be useful prior to I'm hopeful that if you could include in Friday notes confirming the date of our board retreat. We need to get that date locked down so that those of us who have conflicts or wish to perhaps have conflicts know what's going on, so that, you know, I will rearrange my plans if that is a solid date. And so it's important to know. And we'll also need to come up with a subcommittee, but we'll do that when we have everyone can decide, when Mr. Buckman and Mr. Millar are present as well, to plan that that date. So if people could confirm that date, I know our summers tend to get away from us, so that would be helpful.
That is scheduled on the calendar for July 14th.
Yes, so I just need, if people can confirm, if we can lock that down, that would be helpful to me. And, you know, that's what it's all about sometimes. So we will now adjourn until our next regular meeting on May 19th. No, that's not right. Yes, it is. Why does it say B3? Oh, is that a...
Oh, that's backwards.
No. Okay. All right.
It's J2.
Right. Okay, that's why I was confused. Okay. May 19th here.
Okay.
Thank you.